Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to our Aiken City Council work session on March 14, 2005. We have one item to discuss, and then right after that, we'll go into our regular meeting. The item to discuss is Eastgate Drive roundabout landscaping. So without further ado, Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir, Mr. Mayor and Council. We met a number of months ago and talked about the new roundabout on Eastgate Drive as it enters the mall and Publix area. We have before you tonight the landscape plan and wanted to have you take a look at this before we get started and also for any suggestions you may have. We looked at some prefabricated fountains and we could not find anything that would, in our opinion, represent Aiken and yet give the sight distance that you need as you go around that roundabout. So we're suggesting a shallow pool that would have jet sprays that would form some sort of a pattern that would be opened up enough that people could see through it. There's a couple of different examples here of what you could have. You know, we could not find a pattern that we really liked here. And what I would suggest is a ring that would be on the outside that would spray water towards the center with some kind of a jet in the center going on up. But in any case, whatever we come up with, if we need to make any adjustments to it, we could go ahead and fabricate a new ring or go ahead and purchase one to fit the area. So if we go ahead with the pool, as we suggest, and we find it's not working as well as we'd like, we could try something different within that pool itself as far as the fountain is concerned. The landscaping would be about 50% of it would be permanent shrubbery, and the rest would be annuals that we'd be putting out there a couple times during the year. And we think that would complement very well the landscaping that's at the mall and at Publix and provide a nice focal point in that area.
Okay. Roger, question. There appear to be three different designs here of water coming up and out.
And we're not recommending any of those three.
Well, what is this one? I guess my question is this. The first two pages here, is that one particular scheme that can be changed within itself without changing much of the piping or anything or the jet?
Well, the piping goes directly into the pool, and then you have a ring that you could, I assume, Larry, we'd be purchasing these rings?
We'd be purchasing rings. The first page shows an individual ring around the center cascade, and that ring is actually spreading outward the way the nozzle is pointed, with the second page showing an individual ring that is spraying into the middle. And instead of a straight cascade, you have a smaller diameter ring in the middle, which meets at the top peak. So a cascade is nothing but a main center nozzle, which comes up and just kind of falls over on itself. That's the first one in the middle. The second one has a second ring in the middle. To change out the rings is a fairly minor part of the equipment. The main part of the equipment, of course, being the controls, the pumps, the lights, everything like that. So these are just two examples. If council wants to do anything different with it, we can certainly order different rings to make it work. Main thing is to have something that people could see through.
Right. Yeah. The third ring now, the third picture, excuse me. That's still the same type of equipment. I mean, you could get that spray if you wanted to.
Identical equipment, two different rings.
Okay. Okay. All right.
These rings, instead of being pointed in toward the center or out, these are almost vertical, and they keep the same pattern as the cascade if you look at the top of the spray.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Larry, the third one seems to be a two-tier situation. Is it two walls? Am I getting that correct? Or?
Well, this one is. We would not suggest that. It would only be about 24 inches tall. Along.
So what I'm coming back to is it seems to me that the first one has got the low profile we want, and we could actually take that with a smaller center spray and put a ring around the outside coming in.
Yes.
Is that what you're suggesting?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the chief landscaper of my house said that would be great.
Well, yeah, I like
great
that.
Great for him, and it's great for us.
I like that too.
Roger, just one minor question. How much we got budgeted for this? Because we talked about landscaping, and then we talked about just...
The landscaping is, we're just talking about a few thousand dollars worth of shrubbery. The pool itself, I assume we're going to manufacture that ourselves, we're going to buy the pool.
We'll do all the hard construction, the interior piping will cost us around $1,000 for the most intricate design that you see there, and then it goes down from there.
Okay. So altogether, we're probably talking less than $10,000.
Very good. Thank you, Larry. Well, I like the idea personally. Any other thoughts? No. You like it? You don't like it?
I like the first
one. The first one, yeah.
The low one, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what we're planning. It'll have a little bit of a modification to it so you can see through it a little bit more.
Yeah, that center section looks pretty dense.
Okay, that's the only item we have before you tonight. I would like to point out, though, in the issues and updates, we are asking for you to consider some meeting dates. As soon as I can find my issues and updates, there they are. The volunteer lunch, which we would love to have you all at, would be May 5th. That's a Thursday. And the more important meeting, not to say this other one's not important, but if you could look and let us know about April 19th, that'd be our joint meeting with the Planning Commission to develop the action agenda.
And that, what, 6:30, 7?
6:30 at night, and that generally lasts about an hour, hour and a half. We'll have prepared for you some suggestions ahead of time. The Planning Commission will be meeting and talking about that ahead of time. Obviously continue on with our list of items that we had not completed yet to date. And we're right now trying to schedule a meeting sometime around the second week of April concerning our business license. We're getting a couple of dates on that, and I should have something for you within a week on that date.
Okay, very good. Anything else to come up? Any appointments that anyone wants to talk about to committees? This is a good time to do it. To nominate.
Appointments to mention.
Yeah. We can do it later, but I mean, if you want to do it now, you can do that too. Just make council aware of. If, okay. If not, we're about to set a record then by starting a council meeting a little early. How about that? I don't think we've ever done that, have we? We can certainly do it. Let's do it. Yes?
I wonder.
Right.
I would think we got to wait till 7.
You want to wait till 7?
Yeah.
You don't see Mr. Henry.
Okay.
Jim Henry.
He's here.
Yeah. We can do anything council wants to do. We don't have to start. All right. That's fine. Okay. We won't set a record then. We won't make history here.
I think we'll set a record just by starting on time.
Okay.
Do that. I'll say a long prayer.
Everyone here at City Council meeting on March 14th, 2005. We welcome you. If you would please, as we start our meeting, if you would stand for a prayer and pledge of allegiance.
Lord Heavenly Father, we just come together at this meeting with many diverse talents and gifts that you brought to this community gathered together in this room. We just ask that you'd use us and give us the knowledge and wisdom that we need as we discuss the many issues before us. May we join together as a community to make Aiken even better than it is today. We thank you for the staff that we have, the council, the citizens, and just ask your blessing upon all that transpires this evening. And we ask it all in your name. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States.
to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Our first order of business is to approve the agenda for the meeting. Are there any changes, any additions necessary? If not, do we have a motion and a second?
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Passes unanimously. Next item, the minutes. Consideration of the minutes of the work session and the regular meeting of February 28, 2005, and the work session of March 2, 2005. Any discussion on the minutes? If not, do we have a motion?
Mr. Mayor, I move to approve the minutes as read.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay, passes unanimously. The next item is, we're so pleased to, we have a presentation to make tonight, and we're always pleased to do this. We honor folks who have attained a high level of various things, various activities, whether it be education, sports, or just what. And Miles Hall, several days ago, called to attention a gentleman who's about to be inducted into the Indiana Basketball Hall of Fame. And we're fortunate that Mr. Jim Henry is living here in Aiken and Woodside with us, and he's here tonight. And let me read just a short paragraph. Jim Henry was honored in the sports section of the Aiken Standard on Friday, February 25th. He moved to Aiken around 10 years ago after retiring as a vice president in a manufacturing company. He was recently inducted into the Indiana Basketball Hall of Fame, was a former All-State player and at the New Albany High School in Indiana. He later went on to play basketball with Vanderbilt University and was first-team Southeastern Conference player in 59, and later was selected as honorable mention All-American. And we're fortunate to have Jim with us. We invited him here tonight. And Jim, there's a proclamation that City Council has prepared, and I'd like to read that to you. And then if you would like to say a few words, you certainly may do so. Whereas Jim Henry played basketball in New Albany High School in New Albany, Indiana from 1952 to 55, and whereas he was honored as a first-team All-State player in 1955, and he outscored NBA legend Oscar Robinson in the Indiana State Championship game. Whereas he went on to Vanderbilt University and at the time held the school record for most points per game, highest points per game in one season, most points scored in a game, most free throws made, and highest shooting percentage for a season in 1959. And whereas he was named the team captain in 1958 and 59, and was recognized as first team All-SEC in both 58 and 59. And whereas in 58 and 59 he was selected as an honorable mention All-American and graduated with a degree in chemical engineering. And whereas he will be inducted on March 23rd in the Indiana Hall of Fame in Indianapolis, honoring all of his hard work and career accomplishments. Now therefore be it resolved that the Aiken City Council on the 14th day of March 2005 recognizes Jim Henry for his great accomplishments achieved throughout his basketball career and later in life as the vice president of a manufacturing firm. This City Council now hereby congratulates you, Jim, on these great honors and for choosing Aiken as a place to finally call home. Done this day, 14th of March. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. I want to thank you very much for this honor. And even after 50 years, when people recognize you, it's a real thrill. So I get nervous on the basketball court till the game starts. Here, you get nervous the whole time because the games have started. Anyway, I probably don't realize that the importance of this to me, or you don't recognize the importance of this to me, but it is very important in my life. I probably don't deserve all of this that you've said, but still, it's nice to hear. Anyway, more significantly than that, it gives me a chance to stand up here and tell you what we think of Aiken. So it's an opportunity I don't get very often. My wife Sue and I both grew up in Indiana. I went to school in Tennessee. We've moved a lot, so we lived in six different states before finally settling on Aiken 10 years ago after looking for a place to retire. I must say that the expectations in Aiken have been much more than we thought. We've never been disappointed in the 10 years we've lived here, and we would never move anywhere else. We call this home. Indiana's not home. Tennessee's not home. Aiken is our home now. And to show you how important that is, my wife has this saying on the refrigerator door, and it says, "Unfortunately, I wasn't born in the South, but I got here as quick as I could." So that's, and I want to thank you again for this honor and this recognition. Thank you very
Jim,
much.
Thank you. Let us shake hands with you. Come on around. Let everybody shake hands with you.
Congratulations.
Congratulations, sir. Thank you for being here.
You'll see your picture.
Oh, okay. Give that back to him. Replay. Please give that back to him.
That was a foul.
Is this? Wait a minute. That doesn't look good. Why don't we all get around? Everybody get around here. How's this, fellow?
Sir, he came up here.
Okay, Jim. Would you do one more thing? Would you jog up here, please?
Let's see one of those good boots.
That was 50 years ago.
We have no set ways of doing these things, and it doesn't matter, really, does it?
No.
Okay, everybody in the picture that wants to be in the picture? Gary, get in the picture.
Well, you might sue me.
Okay. Thank you, Philip. Again, thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you,
sir.
Thank you. Again, we want to thank Miles and Dick for bringing this to our attention. Thank you, sir. Under old business, the first item has to do with appointments to boards and commissions. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. We have 12 appointments pending, 7 to the Arts Commission, and 3 are for you tonight. One is for Mark Hudgens to be appointed to the Environmental Committee to replace Bill Inman, who had to resign, and this is by Mayor Kavanaugh. Another one is by Dick Smith for Kay Taylor to the Arts Commission, who will represent the visual arts category. And the last appointment is with Mary Ellen Krippner to the Arts Commission for the Arts Organization category, recommended by Councilmember Sprawls. These are the 3 appointments before you tonight.
Okay, thank you, sir. Shall we take them all at one time? Okay. Do we have a motion?
So moved.
Okay. And we have a second, Pat?
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? If not, show hands, please. All in favor? Okay, passes unanimously.
Mr. Mayor, I do have an appointment for the Arts Commission, Mrs. Lynn Swally, and I will have the form filled out, promised next time. I won't
That was
Gwen? Gwen Swally.
Okay.
For the Arts Commission.
Mr. Mayor, my nomination would be Karen Gordon.
Karen Gordon?
Karen.
Okay.
My nominee will be Keisha Lloyd Kennedy, who is the director at the Lloyd Kennedy Charter School and the Aiken Academy for the Performing Arts.
Lloyd Kennedy.
We'll open next fall.
Okay. All right. So those will be on agenda in our next meeting. Okay. Item 2 is the second reading and public hearing of an ordinance dedicating utilities and roads in Parkway South Subdivision. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance accepting the dedication of roads, water utilities, sanitary sewer utilities, stormwater utilities, and related equipment in the Parkway South Subdivision. As I had described at the last meeting, this is a little bit on the unusual side as far as a dedication, because typically when we receive utilities from a subdivision, we get them free and simple. In this particular case, because the property lines of the units within Parkway South go to the center of the street, we have to have a sign-off by each property owner, and in many cases, there is a bank involved due to the mortgage lending that does not allow us to get the dedication 100%. For that reason, we are asking that council accept the deed of dedication that we have to date, with a few signatures missing. We should be able to get those over the next few years. In the meantime, we have a maintenance agreement that we have with this particular subdivision, which allows us to go in there and maintain the water, the sewer, the roads, storm drainage. Thus, we could help them out in the meantime. And it does give us the ability to go in there, we feel, from a legal standpoint and working through what has been a somewhat of a trying situation for the last couple of years and finding the right language and the right means to go ahead and work with that subdivision. So before you tonight, we do have the second reading and public hearing consideration of an ordinance accepting the maintenance of the roads, water, sewer, and storm drainage in the Parkway South subdivision.
Thank you, sir. This is a second reading and public hearing of this ordinance, and if anyone would like to speak on or about this ordinance, you may do so. Please come to the mic if you would.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Yeah.
My name is Phil Wolheiser. I'm an attorney here in Aiken. And I just wanted to add to the request that's before you tonight that this is about 350 yards of roadway. And apparently the effort to develop this subdivision started in the early 80s. And the only explanation we have to being in the shape we are right now, that probably it was set up to be a private facility, you know, limited access, and that just did not work out. The residents of this area did not have the means or the desire to have this be a closed community, a gated type community. And I wanted to also just ask the president if he could come up and say just a word, just to show he's a very, very typical resident of the area. There's 32 homeowners. Bill Peacock, would you please come up? And just to say, this group of homeowners has they've spent $1,000 to prepare the plat that was presented last time. They have worked almost 3 years to get this accomplished, and we've had excellent cooperation from both city attorneys Richard Pierce and Gary Smith. Public Works, it's been super. It's been a very difficult time. We would just get the signatures lined up, and somebody would move, or the whole effort would go down the drain. So I think Mr. Peacock here is a typical resident there, although he has certainly worked a whole lot harder. He's been the spearhead behind it. I wanted him to just give you all a word right now.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Phil.
Thank you, Phil. My name is Bill Peacock. I live at 28 Parkway South. And I want to thank the council for taking this on. We've been working on it for about 3 years. And we've been struggling with it. And About 2 months ago, Roger LeDuc and Mr. Pierce and Gary Smith and Phil Wollheiser got their heads together and come up with a program that we think is acceptable to all concerned. So we do appreciate it, and we hope that tonight we'll put the end to our struggle and make 32 owners very happy. Thank
you. Very good. Good teamwork there, right? We thank everyone that worked on that. Thank you, Mr. Peacock. Okay. Is anyone else that would like to speak on this issue? If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
So may I move that we adopt the ordinance dedicating utilities and roads in Parkway South Subdivision?
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? Thanks again to everyone that worked so diligently on that and so long to make it happen.
I just one question. Will we accept the deeds that they do have, or we just...
We have, and as I stated, we feel within a few years we should probably be able to obtain, as people, their loans are paid off, or as people move in and out, then we'll get the rest
of
them.
We are going to accept the deeds.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, any other discussion? If not, show hands, please. All in favor? Okay, pass this unanimously. Item 3 is a second reading and public hearing of an ordinance designating Hopelands to the Aiken Historic Register. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance designating certain buildings and the brick wall at Hopelands Garden to the Aiken Historic Register as a historic site. I'm going to describe this ordinance and the next one together because they're both very similar and really connected. A couple of years ago, City Council talked about the importance of historic structures in the city and especially the designation of landmarks. And we felt, as a staff and the Historic Commission also felt, that before they start approaching other citizens who may have historic homes that may want to be on the register, that the City of Aiken needed to go ahead and lead as an example. Therefore, we asked Susan French, who does a marvelous job with the Historic Preservation Commission and the commission itself, to go ahead and consider as a landmark designation both Hopelands Garden and Rye Patch. You could see the amount of paperwork that's involved in designating a property. Any property that would get designated as a landmark would also have about 25 pages of documentation behind it. We feel like this is the right thing to do for each of our properties here. Everything will be designated for those properties, including the walls. The only structures that are out there that will not be designated is the building that is connected with the stage, and the new building that the horticulturalist has out there. It's a metal building, but all the other structures would be designated, which means that any changes that we want to make, any modifications, renovations, we would be going before the Historic Preservation Commission to have the review to make sure that things were done properly. The Planning Commission and the Historic Preservation Commission unanimously approved. In fact, it was enthusiastically approved us designating these two properties at their previous meetings. This is the second reading of this ordinance, and it's a public hearing before you tonight to designate the Hopelands Gardens, the Aiken Historic Register.
Thank you, sir. This is a second reading public hearing of this ordinance, and if there's anyone in the audience that would like to speak on this issue, you may do so. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
Mayor, I move that we approve this ordinance on second reading to designate Hopelands to the Aiken Historic Register.
Okay.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Second. Okay, any discussion?
I was reading through all the literature on this and found some real interesting facts in here. The Crooked Wall, as my children called it, was actually built by the McGee family. And then there's a little something in here about people staying at hotels. And I just thought it was really funny the way they came up with the news. I don't imagine the Aiken Standard could do that nowadays. who's coming and who's going.
Thank you, Beverly. Any other thoughts? If not, show of hands, please, all in favor. Okay, passes unanimously. Item 4 is the second reading public hearing of an ordinance designating Rod Patch to the Aiken Historic Register. Mr. LeDuc.
Yes, sir. I'll read this by title only. It's an ordinance designating certain buildings and the brick wall at Rod Patch, the Aiken Historic Register, as a historic site. Again, as I stated, this is a landmark. Again, a lot of information backing this up. And this is the second reading public hearing of an ordinance to designate Rye Patch the Aiken Historic Register.
Okay, thank you, sir. This is the second reading and public hearing of this ordinance. And if anyone would like to speak about it, you may do so. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
Mr. Mayor, I move we approve this ordinance on the second reading to designate Rye Patch as an historic landmark in Aiken.
Second.
Okay, any discussion?
I do want to mention one thing, if I could. First of all, thank you, Susan, again, for the wonderful history that we can keep of these two buildings that are so significant in our history. Also, I want to mention, and I think probably you got the literature, on the 31st of March, in relation to this, now that we've got buildings that the city owns that are historic, the Archives and History Department in Columbia is having their annual conference on preservation at the Archives and History Office. It's open to everybody, and it's fascinating. It really is interesting to anyone. It's about materials, but it's also about style. I think there's included a tour of some mills that have been made over into apartments. It's quite an event, and it's something. And one of the categories, by the way, is affordable housing in historic districts and what materials to use and things like that. So I think we're facing a lot of the issues that they're addressing here, and I just think that since we are now needing to know more and more about historic properties, it might be something we'd want to do.
Thank you, Jane. Any other comments? If not, show of hands, please, all in favor. Okay, passes unanimously. Under new business, the first item is the first reading of an ordinance removing restrictions on a lot at the Aiken Golf Club. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance authorizing the owner of a restricted lot, part of the former Highland Park Country Club, now known as Aiken Golf Club, to remove the restrictions against the building on it. We moved Jim McNair up a little higher on the schedule because last time you were here on a very similar subject, you waited 2 hours to get to your item. And it only took a couple minutes once we got to it. But Jim is here tonight, and as he stated a couple of months ago, he had another piece of property, Lot 47, that was considered a number of years ago as part of the package to be released. At that time, there was one of the adjoining owners had some problems with that. He has now since got permission of all the owners. No, not permission, but no one seems to object to it anymore. And so he is asking this council consider releasing this lot like he did the other ones in 1996 to be used for residential lot. He hopes someday to build on it, but again, his council needs to understand that if you release this, whether Jim builds on it or he sells it to someone else to build on it, the same restrictions would apply no matter who owns this lot. This would have to abide by any review by the Historic Preservation Commission, since it is in a historic district, and he has talked to the neighbors, as I stated, Will Harper in particular, who lives next to this. And he's asking tonight that you would consider this ordinance to authorize the removal of any restrictions against building a home on Lot 47 located at the corner of Chafee Spring Road and Valley Green Drive. And upon your consideration, a second reading and public hearing would be held at the next regularly scheduled meeting.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion?
May I move it?
Second.
Okay, any discussion? If not, show of hands, please, all in favor. Okay, passes unanimously. Item 2, under new business, first reading of an ordinance to annex property at Jim Lakes. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir, I'm going to read this by title only. It's an ordinance to annex the corporate limits of the city of Aiken, certain property consisting of 332 lots and located in Gem Lake subdivision to zone the same single-family residential RS 15. We've been talking about this situation for approximately 8 months. We were approached last summer concerning the possibility of the city purchasing the sewer system in Gem Lakes and the individuals that are currently on the system repaying the city for that system. Council at a recent meeting, I believe it was in January, decided to go ahead and to start the negotiation process with Carolina Utilities for that purchase after we received a petition from the Gem Lake residents asking us to do so. The petition for annexation came before the Planning Commission at the last meeting. There are two formats that Council could consider for annexation. One is the petition method, which is before you tonight, and that would consist of just those property owners that actually signed the petition. The second format that you could use under annexation would be the state law, which says 75% of the property owners would have to sign and 75% of the value of the property would have to be acquired before coming to the city. We have received, as of today, I think it was 88.2% of the property owners have signed, and 87.3% of the valuation is included in that area. Larry, if you could, we have an overhead, and then we also have the drawing over there on the board. Everything that's in the dark area has signed a petition. The area right in the very center is the lake itself. The Recreation Association also was one of the signees. There are a couple of properties here. One's right here. And then you have two at the lower end. Those are crosshatched. Those just came in recently in the last couple of weeks. Individuals that came forward after considering it further and decided to go ahead and sign the petition. You want to just bring that up? Okay. Can you all see those properties that I was mentioning? There's one right here, one right there, and there's one right here. I have talked to several individuals out in the Gem Lakes area that have not signed. Several of them are somewhat anxious concerning the purchase of the sewer system and wanting to make sure that the sewer system is going to be purchased by the city of Aiken. And our agreement that we have made with the residents is that we would not present the second reading of the annexation until we were able to go ahead and fully negotiate the purchase of the sewer system with Carolina Utilities, and even then we would not bring it back to our council until we had another public meeting with the residents in Gem Lakes as to what the purchase price would be. So they would understand that their monthly payments would be based on, let's say, 10 years, it may be $15-$18 a month. But that's the part that we're working with Carolina Utilities at this point in time to determine can it be purchased and how would that take place. So again, you have two different formats that before tonight. The Planning Commission, when they heard it, felt that and are recommending to you the 100%, which means you're using the 75% rule and that every property out there should be annexed. But again, you have that choice of either method that you'd like to use. Both of them would work, whether it's the 75% or the petition method. What was presented to you by the Gem Lakes Association was the petition method. We could talk further about it. Again, this is first reading with the idea that it'd probably be 1 to several months before you'll get second reading before you, and that's all going to be dependent upon the actual purchase and negotiation of the system itself. So for City Council consideration, this is first reading of an ordinance to annex up to 332 properties in Gem Lakes based on petitions received from the subdivision. Upon City Council consideration, a public hearing will be held in the near future.
Okay, thank you, sir. Well, I assume that there are a few folks that would like to speak on this issue. Now, normally on first readings, you know, that's for council to make a decision as to whether or not to, what to do and take it to the public hearing. But if there are a few, just a couple, that would like to speak on both sides of the issue, if they are. I'm not trying to get people to speak on it, believe me. But I would like to suggest that maybe we have two people on both sides of the issue, so the council can maybe understand a little bit more. We think we know both sides of the issue, but it might help us just to speak for about maybe 3 minutes. Do we have two people that would like to speak on the pro side?
If there are more than two, could we hear them?
Well, we could, but we don't want to go on long because we will have a public hearing on the issue. How about on the negative side?
Will we vote at the same night as the public hearing?
What?
We'll be voting the same night as the public hearing.
Yes, that's why we're allowing people to speak tonight.
Not good, because this is so complicated. I really...
Yeah, well, we're going to hear a couple. And then if council wants to go more, we'll stay here all night if we need to. Okay, how about...
Mr. Mayor, but could council just need to suspend the rules to allow that?
Okay, do we have a motion to suspend the rules?
I move that.
Okay, I'm sorry, my fault. We've got a second? Okay, all in favor? Suspend the rules to allow this? Okay, passes unanimously. Okay, let's have a pro and a con, and then a pro and a con, okay? Who wants to be first on the in favor side?
Michael Davenport, live on 584 Lakeside Drive. Mayor Cavanaugh, City Council members, Mr. LeDuc, residents of Gem Lakes, guests and visitors. Tonight, to some, is seen as a historic day. Before you for first reading are petitions from residents of Gem Lakes subdivision to annex a portion of our neighborhood into the City of Aiken. Much water has passed over the dam these last 30 or so years relative to annexation of the Gem Lakes subdivision. In the past, tempers have run hot and feelings between neighbors strained when this issue was discussed. However, while we should never ignore the past, we do need to deal with the present and those issues that have brought our community before you tonight. In the summer of 2004, we approached the city for assistance relative to the purchase of the sewer system currently located in a large portion of the Gem Lakes subdivision. Our approach to the city was based upon the fact that the current owner had filed and was awaiting approval from the Public Service Commission on a 365% rate increase they stated was necessary to cover operational expenses and the cost of capital upgrades necessary to address a consent decree with DHEC. This consent decree required them to tie their outflow into the City of Aiken's pumping facility on Lakeside Drive and to close down their processing ponds and spray fields. While the residents had retained a lawyer and were fighting the proposed rate increase, the reality was apparent that unless something else was done, the battle with the private owners would be ongoing yearly activity. Our approach to the city was simple and straightforward. Would the city consider purchasing the sewer system and operating it? The response from the city was favorable, but with hesitation. This hesitation was due in part from the fact that the affected area was outside the city limits. While being neighborly and helpful is certainly an admirable character trait, the city does have a fundamental responsibility to its existing residents to be good stewards of public funds. In a nutshell, what was the incentive or inducement for the city to take on the troubled sewer system? After further discussion, it was proposed that the city, that if the sewer system residents agreed to, one, pay for the cost of the sewer system purchase over a number of years through a monthly fee, and two, annex into the city, would the city purchase the system? The answer was yes, contingent upon the city residents agreeing to the purchase of the system at a referendum and the current owners agreeing to its sale at a reasonable price. With this answer in hand, correspondence was sent to each of the affected residents explaining the proposal. Additionally, a series of public town hall meetings were held to discuss the issues and allow residents to express their opinions and concerns. Of particular interest during the town meetings were the individual cost impact and rules for annexation. As part of the background work and annexation up to this point, a cost analysis spreadsheet was made available to the residents of the affected area so that they could do an individual financial analysis. Surprisingly, a large majority of those who performed this analysis determined that they would either break even or save money. There were some, such as myself, who determined that annexation would be a negative financial impact. Interestingly enough, though, most of the people with negative impact still signed up for and agreed to annexation as being the right thing to do. During the town meeting, care was taken to explain both the 100% and 75% annexation rules. This was done in particular because neighbors were concerned about forcing annexation upon their neighbors. While the residents understood the need to annex as a means to solve our sewer system problem, they did not feel it was appropriate to force someone into the city against their will. As a result of the meetings, the annexation petitions were drafted along with a parallel sewer system purchase petition. Why were parallel petitions done, you may ask? Simply stated, is because an annexation petition cannot have conditions placed upon them, such as, we will annex if you purchase the sewer system. However, it was understood and publicly stated with Mr. LeDuc in attendance during our town hall meetings that if the city were unable to purchase the system, that the annexation petitions would not go forth without the residents concurring to the annexation without purchase. This parallel purchase petition also contained wording that the residents understood that the city may impose a fee to recover the cost associated with the purchase of the sewer system. This was done consciously so that no one could state later that they did not know the city was going to impose a fee. The wording in the annexation petition was also done in such a way that residents gave the city council the option to invoke either the 100% or 75% annex rule. However, in our cover letter to the city, we respectfully requested that the city council only annex 100% of the people who signed the petition and not force anyone into the city against their will. Annexation is and always will be an emotional issue. Logically, the city council does not want to create donut holes. If I were sitting in your chairs tonight, I would be logically inclined to argue for the use of the 75% rule and annex everyone. However, I would also not want to be in your situation tonight and have to decide whether to force annexation upon your friends and neighbors. It is my firm belief that it is better to have 100% satisfied customers than even one angry customer, or approximately 40 in this case. If you allow these donut holes to exist, once they see the services and savings that their neighbors are realizing by being in the city, they too will annex into the city. Additionally, some of the people in these donut holes are simply waiting for the hard facts, dollar figures from the city about the purchase of the sewer system before signing. Once this information is published, they have stated they will gladly sign. Once again, I implore the City Council to be neighborly and to proceed with the annexation of only those persons requesting it on the petition. Thank you very much for this time to speak.
Thank you. Anyone have a question of Mike?
The thing that I'm concerned about with donut holes is that I have a lot of questions about that, and I know that you've faced them too. If we allow donut holes, does that mean that everybody that signs this petition is still committed to annexation, or could they say, wait a minute, you know, if I don't have to annex into the city in order to get sewer service, I don't want to?
The people on the petition, the annexation, are committed to annexation.
Okay.
All right. We went in, and on that petition, we gave you the option of going either way, 75 or 100%. We ask that you do the 100% rule and only annex those who are on the petitions, but the people who signed said we want in the city. We want in the city. We want the city to buy the sewer system. We want out from under this mess that we have, and the only long-term solution to that is to get the city involved. We as residents don't have the continuing resources, the time or the energy to constantly fight this company before the Public Service Commission.
Yeah.
And that's why we approach the city as, I think my initial statements to Roger were, we'd like the city to ride over the hill on their white horse in their white armor, and save us.
We have to walk 10 feet. You have to ride over the hill.
Okay, thanks. Thank you, Roger. Okay, who's next? Yes, sir.
I want to thank the council and all of the Gem Lakes residents for coming out to for our meeting tonight. I am one of the white blocks on the map of 102 Savannah. Again, my name is Bill Busser. I work with Jerry McCarty. We helped organize the sewer issues and meeting with the DHEC and Public Service Commission. And I would like to point out there's one minor error on there. Jerry McCarty has since removed his name from the petition, and it has not been so reflected on the chart.
Right. We have it in the notes, though.
Okay.
You're absolutely correct.
I do not object to the annexation. I object to 100%. We moved out of the city a number of years ago because we like to live in the county. We like Gem Lakes because it's the type of community we want. It has, we're happy with all of the services there except for the sewer system. And so, you know, basically we just are happier, would be happier staying in the county than being in the city. And that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Bill, you on the sewer system now? Or do you have a septic tank or what?
Sewer system. But we do have people out there that are in that area that are on the septic systems.
Right.
And they're in the list to be annexed.
Right.
So I think 100%, annexing 100% of the people is the wrong way to go. We have a lot of people that are, I think, feel the way I do. I've talked to a lot of them. Hopefully a lot of them have shown up tonight.
Yeah, let me ask a question here. Maybe others are wondering too now. Now, Bill is on the sewer system. When it gets repaired, it's working great. He's still on the sewer system. Mm-hmm. And paying what?
He'd be paying double the rates.
Double the rates, okay.
Of what the other people would be paying.
Okay.
Just like he's on the water right now.
Right, okay. And double water rates, insurance would be?
Double the new rate, which is going to be negotiated?
No, the rate to purchase the system is a rate that everybody would be paying. That would be a constant rate, no matter if you're living inside the city or outside the city. But the maintenance fee that we charge all of our existing customers for the sewer service, let's say that's $15 a month. Bill would be paying $30 a month, where his neighbors would be paying $15 a month, just like his water is double right now.
And the fire protection.
And the fire protection. So he would continue to pay those outside rates.
From just a practical, the garbage collection now at Jim Lake is picked up by who? Is it Tyler?
Yes.
Tyler does that. Anybody talk to Tyler about whether his rate's going to stay the same with if you have to go around to each one of those green boxes?
No, I don't think so.
Mm-hmm. I would hate to be the garbage man that tries to figure out who's on what, but that's our dilemma,
right,
in making this decision about what do we do with our garbage and what do we do with our police. You know, we do have fire protection there now, but then we have...
Well, we're paying for the fire protection.
But we have all that purple that we will provide police protection to. So you got that. That's what our dilemma is when it looks at 42 donut holes. And it's got nothing...
Right.
We wish everybody was coming.
Well, it seems like with computer systems and so forth, if I dial in with my phone number, it would be easy enough to flag it to say that if I do a 911, that I'm in the county and you notify the sheriff. If I lived out just outside of there, a little farther down Silver Bluff Road, and I called 911, still somebody would decide whether it was the sheriff or the police that should come.
That sounds easy. But
yeah. So, Bill, your main point is you just don't want to be in the city. Is that right?
I just don't want to be in the city.
Okay. Well, that's what
Bill,
I was looking for. To
are you see. One that, after seeing over time what the others are enjoying as a result of being in the city, that there's a possibility to change your mind?
Probably not. I lived in the city before and
okay.
I moved out.
May we ask why you moved out?
I just prefer less government.
Okay.
I think like the fees on the phone, the cable, electric, I just think there's too much government involvement in everything we do.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's fair. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Do we have someone else on the floor?
Mr. Mayor, if I could, while the next speaker's coming
yes.
up.
Yes, sir.
He talked about the gentleman who has tried to withdraw his name from the petition.
Yeah.
If council goes forward under the 75% method, I don't know that the statutes do not provide for that ability. So I want council to be aware of that. Obviously, if you go forward with the 100% method, council can do what council chooses to do.
Okay. Someone else on the in favor side? Okay. No one else? Okay. How about on the negative side, or the not so sure side, or whatever? Okay. Okay. How about you, please?
Thank you, Mayor. Sure. My name is Karen Skiff, and I too am one of the white ones that are not being, that did not sign the petition. And the reason I didn't sign the petition is because I have a unique situation where I am. I'm in the area where the sewer system is, but my house was built before the sewer was put in, and so I am on septic tank and well. So I currently don't use city services at all. I don't, other than fire protection, I use my own water and my own septic. So until such time, and I realize that if my septic tank were to blow up, I would then have to tie into the sewer line. But at that point, I'd say, fine, I'll annex. But right now, I wouldn't be getting enough services to warrant signing the petition at this point.
Where are you?
I am right here, which if you look back here, can I stay out anyway?
You're on the...
I back up to the spray fields. My backyard is at the spray
Lucky
fields.
You.
Lucky me.
Karen, how long you lived there?
We moved in 1999.
You're... Point of view.
You think she's in? Is she in?
Where's the screen?
It's green.
She's saying, can she stay out anyway?
When Gem Lakes, my understanding is when Gem Lakes was first built and developed, there was phase one and phase two. Phase one is all here and stops at Huron.
Well, yeah, I understand.
So none of this lakeside was built yet. The people that owned my house before me bought this 1 acre lot from the developer, and they had to put in a well and a septic tank because the sewer didn't reach to that lot yet. So when my house was built, the only way they could move in was to put in a septic tank and a well. Now, I understand there are lots of other lots in Gem Lakes that are on septic tank and well, but I believe I'm the only one in my little vicinity here, so I'm like an island.
The rest of them are not on the sewer system. They're all north of there, in other words.
Exactly. I think I'm the only one on this side of the neighborhood that is in my particular condition. So I would just say, please don't annex me. You can have the rest of the neighborhood, and at such time as I... And that's why I just wanted to have my say tonight, because I know that I am in a very unique situation.
And there are a few others like that. But there are some.
And I don't know if any of them have signed. And like I said, I have no problem with it. When my septic tank goes, I'll come to you then and say, okay, I'm ready. But at this point...
Thank you, Karen. We understand. Thank you. Okay, someone else? Yes, sir?
My name is Swede Sundstrom. I live at 602 Chestnut Court. And my comment is not for or against. It's merely a comment to try to resolve the overall situation. I have heard some residents say at not in meetings, but within Gem Lakes, that they're living on a rather fixed income. Mm-hmm. And I think this may be one of the reasons for their reluctance to want to join the city. I'm not sure what the law is or how this can be done, but the thought that came to me sitting out here was, when the time comes that the families who live in the white areas that we're referring to as donut holes, when they go to sell their property, could the city then insist upon that then becoming a part of that property becoming part of the city, so that eventually all of Gem Lakes would become city property? It's a legal question which I don't know the answer to, but I just...
I believe that the present city council has the legal right to adopt such a policy. In fact, the city council discussed such a policy in the Aiken Estates area years ago, and it was, as we've discussed before, is one of the hottest city council meetings I've ever been to. And the idea was, when the people who were green sold their house, then whoever bought the greenhouse would have to then sign an annexation agreement with the city in order for them to be provided water and sewer. I believe the city has the legal right to do that. Whether the city wants to do that or not is another story.
Well, this was my idea.
Yes.
That's all I wanted to present.
Okay. Thank you, sweetie.
Could I ask a question?
Oh, go ahead.
Is it something, Gary, that would, with future councils to count, down the road?
Future councils could change the policy.
Exactly.
Yeah. If this council adopted a policy, once a new council came on board, the new council could come up with an entirely different policy.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. My name's Harry Douglas, and I live on Huckleberry. One question I have, maybe more a question of clarity, when we talk about 100% annexation of Jim Lakes, I live on Huckleberry, which is outside of this purple area. 100% would be roughly 500 houses in Jim Lake subdivision, not 300.
We're just talking about the purple.
Okay.
The
and there's no method where the attorney mentioned you can come back and still annex the whole thing.
If by virtue of annexing these properties, your property becomes contiguous, city, and whoever developed your property signed an annexation agreement with the city in return for delivering city water and city sewer services to your residents, then the city can invoke that annexation agreement and require you to come into the city at that time. Okay. But that's only until your property is contiguous.
Until it's contiguous.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Is his area... I'm just questioning.
Sorry.
There is an area that will become contiguous, and I don't know if you're in it or not.
I don't think ours is, because we back up to the cut line in another neighborhood. It's not even in Jim Lake.
Yeah.
But, one quick comment, though. I have great sympathy for the folks that, are in this area, because it's a major problem for them. So, thank you.
Thank you, sir. Anyone else? Yes, sir.
One minute.
Yeah.
That's what they all say.
My name is Malcolm Kyle, and I live up on Springwood Drive, and I'm one of the green areas I guess I didn't sign. I guess one of my major concerns is the fact that what would happen if the city is not able to actually gain the sewer system. I understand the process, and the second reading will wait until you negotiate the prices. And at that time, I guess if everyone agrees on it, I think it has to go before a vote, I understand, the citizens of the city. And what happens if Jim Lakes is annexed with the city not voting it to be purchased? Then we'd have a situation where, I guess, Jim Lakes residents would be on a private sewer system with the city acquiring that particular area. That's my concern, one of my bigger concerns right now. And I think that'd be bad for both the city, and I think it'd be also bad for the Jim Lakes residents. And I believe if you looked at the purple over there and did another survey based on that situation, I don't think you have a lot of purple. So that's my big concern.
I guess we don't know until that vote would take place by the Senate. It would be a special election. It wouldn't be not be in November. We would have it earlier than that. And so I don't know. I guess maybe there's some part of a risk there, but I don't see it. I don't see the citizens of the city who will go to vote anyway. Not many go on these special elections. You get 200, 300, 400, you're fortunate. I don't see why the city, any city residents would have a problem with this annexation.
I guess my other point would be to be assured why wouldn't you go ahead and take care of the sewer problem first and then do the annexation. Then you don't have the issue.
One of the reasons why would be the individuals then who would be in the city could influence to some degree that election by the fact that they would already be in the city and they could vote for that.
That's correct.
Particular issue.
I understand that, yes. But you don't know who might show up to vote, who wouldn't show up to vote. And I just present that as what would happen to the city. How do we deal with it? I guess the city's going to have a real headache with a number of residents out there with a bum sewer system. that you can't do much with, and here we are paying higher rates and then also paying city taxes. So anyway, that's my point to make.
Is there a way, that's a great point, I mean, is there a way that if the referendum is not passed?
There is a way, and
they wouldn't have
Larry
to
and I have not really discussed this, so Larry, you're sitting down, that's good. would be that
sounds like condemnation.
We could go ahead and operate the system. In other words, it could be owned by another party. You form up a sewer association, so to speak, within Gem Lakes, and then we'd go ahead and operate it just like we operate our own existing system to maintain it and do the billing on the water bill like we do with a lot of other things. It's not exactly following the procedure we'd want to, but it certainly could go ahead and take care of the problem and deal with the issue that's at hand. But I really don't think that would have to come to that point of us having to operate that system in that manner.
As an example, the previous vote we had on the Park South Road, which we couldn't get done, when those city taxpayers came in and said, would you please help us resolve this problem, we resolved the problem with the city taxpayers, and we want to do everything we could to help them. We formed it.
Yeah, we'll find a way to deal with the issue. I'm not too sure how we deal with it, but that was one of the things that Mike and I discussed early on is the what ifs. And the thing is, once you're inside the city, then we're going to do everything that's necessary to protect and to help the citizens within the area.
You know, one of the things on this thing, though, think about it. We wait until at a special election, the people in the purple do not vote, and you have 20 people who are upset that somebody says we're bailing out Gem Lake, and 20 people show up who are city taxpayers and say we don't want to do this. 20 people show up because they're only going to show up because they're upset that somehow the city is bailing out Gem Lake. Well, think what happened in that case. You have 20 people, because y'all don't vote. You have 20 people in the city who show up for a special election because the only ones that would show up would be ones that are irritated. So they determine we don't determine. So you see what I'm saying?
I'm just trying to help the city avoid a risk.
It is a good question, but I think we've all looked at it pretty hard, and the risk is really minimal.
Well, you've got a company
in other words, if everyone in Gem Lake wants, we've had an electorate of 600 or 700 people that can show up to vote in their system.
Think about this. We do what you say, have the referendum first is what we'd have to do, right, Roger? Y'all can't vote, just the people in the city. And believe me, in a special election, they're going to say, well, the only people who are going to show up for that one would be the ones that were saying, well, I don't want to do that. And 25 people show up. They could determine it. So then what are you? Then you have a vote from the citizens, and we can't take it.
Well,
we can't take it.
I understand what you're saying. I'm just saying I'm presenting this to you as no risk.
Yeah. But there's risk to you.
Yeah.
In other words, we negotiate.
I'm fine. I'm okay outside the city.
You're okay outside the city, but you still have the rest of the sewer. What we determine what you want to do.
Yes,
we go to the citizens. They say no.
Yes.
You still got the sewer problem, but you don't have a city.
I can move out, but right now I'm not moving out.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the rest of my voice if I want to go.
I understand. I understand why the people in purple. If I was on the purple, I'd say I think I got a good chance to get the referendum passed.
Yeah. But I think, like I said, my point is that if you don't get the sewer system, I don't think you'll have the purple there.
Yeah.
Malcolm, I'm going to do everything. I mean,
I'm
sitting on try.
Just a point. And I guess one other point I guess I'll leave you, which is probably something y'all don't want to worry about, but Gem Lakes is a large society, large group of population, and this is just only one part. I guess I would like to see the entire system considered as annexation as opposed to just a one little donut inside Gem Lakes, because this area is surrounded by other people who would not be in the city.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I think that will come. You know, it's been a long time getting as far as we are tonight. And let me say this. This city council, this city wants to be good neighbors. I mean, I think it's a super day when we can even think about having 86% of the citizens in Gem Lakes, in this part of Gem Lakes, wanting to come into the city. I think it's good for them. It's a win-win for all of us. And this bailing out Gem Lakes thing, that is is not so at all. I mean, it's a win-win from both sides. I don't feel like we're bailing out anybody. We're working together. We're partners, and that's the way I look at it. And I'll go a step further, too. I'm in favor of the petition method, not the 75% rule where we force people in. I do not want, and this is my opinion, I do not necessarily want people in the city if they're going to be negative about the city. We've not done this over the last 10 years. Gary mentioned the past we had about 10 years ago, and I never want to go through that again. 300 people standing up, you know, and it was just a bad scene. And so as a result of that meeting, we decided we were gonna forget the push approach, if you would, and we came up with some incentives for people to want to annex. Abatement of taxes for 3 years if they would come in right away, or 2 years if they waited a year, or 1 year if they went. And that didn't seem to help either. So we said, after 2 years, we said, no, we're just going to not pursue this. We'll put in infrastructure where it seems very appropriate that probably in the near future people would want to come in. And we're seeing that. Just about every meeting we have an annexation. Might be a small one lot. And that's the way, personally, I want to work with this. I think a lot of the folks, once we get to working and get the sewer fixed and what have you, I think that some of those green dots are going to, homes are going to want to come in. I hope they will.
I agree.
Because we want them to. We want to be good partners, good neighbors. And so that's my approach. That's going to be my approach on this whole issue. I'm not in favor of forcing anybody in that doesn't want to come in.
Mr. Mayor, are you saying
I told Jerry this.
Mr. Mayor, are you favor, I mean, of having the donut hole?
Look, we had a big donut hole of 320-some houses out there, as far as I'm concerned, that wasn't in the city. I'm willing to take 86% of those into the city rather than vote for nothing or all, you know, and leaving the 86%.
Well, to be honest, I agree with you, except for the fact I'm concerned about the efficiencies of our city taxpayers, our garbage men, our police,
okay,
and whatever.
All right, we've already asked Larry about that. Larry, would you come up, please, and tell us what you told us?
Thank you.
About that? And is Pete here? Pete, could you come up too and tell about public safety? Maybe I haven't heard. Maybe I'm not concerned enough about it. But with
our garbage system, because we are moving to the roll cart system, our garbage folks will know which houses to pick up. If a city of Aiken roll cart's not sitting out in front of it, we're not going to pick it up. If you look, the way the streets are, we will be having to drive all streets. No matter what. Yep. The main problem that's going to be had will be trash pickup, limbs, grass clippings, things like this. If it's set near a property line, my guys are probably going to get it, whether the house is in the city or the county. So very likely some county residents are going to get some city services that we just don't know about, again, if trash is near a property line. We don't go out and measure property lines. We can't.
Right.
We're having to move too fast to try to get through the city and give the service that we have.
But this is where those that are in the city can keep a eye out, too, and make sure they're not collecting someone else's trash in front of their house.
Correct. And we have had that happen in other places. You know, whether or not it would happen here, who knows, but we have had that problem in other places. So, yes, we would have to make sure that our guys realize what we were doing out there. As far as the charge for everything, that would be set up through computers, so that if someone did decide to annex in, then we would have to make sure that the double charges and everything were taken off. But that is done through a letter, normally after the annexation is complete, for each lot.
Okay. So what's the bottom line of your message to us?
Bottom line is we will have to drive every street no matter what. Which means we'll drive past a donut hole. Knowing that they're not going to have a roll cart that says City of Aiken, they will not get that service. We've got to fix the water leaks anyway. If the sewer system's mine, we'll have to fix it anyway. They will pay their double portion on it. The main problem that we see right now is going to be trash collection and what happens with that and how we can tell city versus non-city.
Well, can't we ask questions, though? If you think that this kind of thing is happening, that someone in the county is putting trash over on the city property. If you think that's happening, you can start asking questions of the person that lives on the city, in the city lot.
We can ask questions, but what we have found out is that, by and large, folks do not want to upset a neighbor, especially if they've lived next to them for years. And
well, they don't want to be upset either with their trash, right?
Well, but that it's not upsetting anybody there because we're picking it up.
Mr. Mayor.
Okay.
I have one question.
That's all.
This is really, you know, I mentioned when we had the work session that I was concerned about forcing people to come in who didn't want to be in. I think we have a wonderful city. We have a city manager, I think, that does 120-130% all the time, and most times he goes beyond that to solve problems. And I think he's done some wonderful, come up with some wonderful things tonight to solve some of the issues that I had. But I'm concerned that if we tell them, like you just said, that how easy it would be to skip lot lines, that you got to run the streets anyway. What if the number drops from 86% to 43%? Because now they're saying, well, you know, I really don't have to come in now. What if we start to see that going on, that the people who did sign the petition say, if it's that simple, then, you know, I really don't have to do that.
Gary, that's just one
item. Well, it could be police protection. It could be anything. What if it's...
Council has the ability to either allow, if you go with the 100% method, where you only take in all of the properties that have signed,
right,
then if you get homeowners like the one gentleman who's already come forward, and they say, we want to withdraw our name from the petition, council can vote on that, and y'all can decide as a council how you want to handle that. It would be perfectly fine for you to go ahead and force them to annex, even though they're now telling you they don't want to annex.
But, I mean, you know, I really am opposed to forcing people to annex, and if someone changes his mind tonight and says, I want my name off of the petition, we would be forcing them in if we adopt that rule. We really would be. And at what point do we say, after tonight, are we sticking with the 86%, the people in purple, or will we allow any of those to drop and say, I don't think I want to do this? I mean, what is going to be our position?
Well, I think they're committed. They're committed.
We don't even have a motion on the floor.
No, we don't.
We're
but
we're discussing fines.
Well,
we were getting input from outside.
But you know what?
From Larry.
What are you saying?
I'm saying when we finish the discussion, let's bring it back. Let's talk.
Okay.
Put the motion on the floor. Amend it if necessary, and then we can talk about it.
Okay. All right.
Larry.
I think that's the orderly way to do it.
Cool. I don't think there's anything wrong with asking Larry questions.
Have questions about what he's saying. And
that's right. Cheers.
Any other questions?
Yes,
Larry?
I do. What are the do we know the conditions of the sewer system out there?
We have televised some of the sewer system, and most of what we televised did look fairly good. There are some roots in it. You know, normal maintenance problems that should have been taken care of over the years, which have not been. We did, under a Freedom of Information Act with DHEC, find out that there are a couple of sections that are in fairly poor condition. Numerous backups and some problems like that we will have to go in and spend some money on. We did not televise those sections. We did not know about them when we had our TV cameras down here from West Columbia. That is a consultant that does work with us to televise those. So we do know we will have to spend some money. And part of the budget that we originally looked at when I was working with the city manager on this was to allow about $100,000 in capital projects that we would need over the next few years to make sure the system was brought back up to snuff and we did not have backup problems. We've been doing essentially the same type program in Carlson Park for several years now, and every couple of years we will do another program up there there to upgrade lines and prevent backups happening in houses there. So we did take that into account.
Is this $100,000 going to be included in the money that is loaned?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
That was from the inception of our discussions that that number was put out there, and it may not be 100. It may be 50. We really don't know, but we tried to use that as a gauge against which to work.
The negative comments that I've heard are generally of the, we've got sewer problems in my neighborhood that are not being solved. What are you doing going out there and spending all this money to solve problems? I mean, that's the negative comments that I've heard.
Do we know what they are?
Well, I'm
those sewer problems?
I'm hearing it from the Tool Hill area in terms of what their pipes are made of. And some of it is just, again, this area was constructed years ago, just cardboard paper.
Ms. Price, if I can address that for you, what we have found is not the main lines in Tool Hill that were made. That's called Orangeburg pipe, mm-hmm. and quite literally it is paper soaked with tar is what it is. We have not found the main lines to be made of that. We have found house services. Orangeburg was very popular for the 4-inch and 6-inch house services. Where we're doing a revitalization in Tool Hill, we have gone in and replaced all of the sewer services there to the homes that we're trying to construct. And as we get problems with homes like that, we replace from our main over to the property line. Then it is up to the owner then to replace from the property line into the house.
The linear lines that have been run here were run about the same time as the Hounds Lake lines and those type of lines, were they not? The linear lines, in other words, the street lines.
Yes, sir.
I mean, it's the same type of
about
material.
The same
type.
What we found the material to be in Jim Lakes is vitrified clay pipe.
Mm-hmm. What about Crossland Park? That's where I've heard.
Crossland Park, a little bit different situation. There is vitrified clay pipe there, but what happened at Crossland Park, the park was... if you'll pardon the expression, thrown up almost literally overnight, slab-on-grade homes. They put septic tanks in solid red clay. It doesn't take too much smarts to know that they don't work in red clay. So within months, they were back digging through backyards and putting pipe in the ground trying to make that system work. Pipe that we have found up there, we've found houses built on it, we found trees that have gotten into the sewer. We found a lot of pipe in Crossland Park that was 6 inches in diameter instead of 8. So that's what we've been facing up there. Different situation than what we feel we have here in Jim Lakes. Everything that we looked at there, and we looked at well over 1,000 feet of line, was 8-inch diameter pipe, and it was vitrified clay.
But you have an ongoing
program in Crossland Park. We spent about $500,000 already in the last 5 years in Crossland Park.
And right. You're doing that in phases.
Correct.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
And there's money in the 1 cent sales tax, too.
There's money in the 1 cent sales tax coming up to address problems such as this, Ms. Vodders is talking about also.
I would ask counsel, when you hear these problems, tell Roger or tell Larry right away.
I do.
You do?
Yeah.
They call them.
Okay. Are they being worked on then?
Well, these folks have mentioned these problems at the community meetings. And the problem is you have the income level, the low income level in Tool Hill, that they cannot afford to put, they don't have the revenue to pay for it. If it's on their property, they can't. They can't pay for the expense.
It's not a city problem. It's a house problem.
Well, it's a combination, Roger, from what I'm hearing from the residents there. So,
just like here, if they got a problem from the street line to their house, that's their responsibility.
That's correct.
Yeah.
That would be the same citywide. From the property line to the house is the homeowner's responsibility.
One question about the roads and the streets. Are these county-maintained, state? The signs are all over the place out
part,
there.
Part of them are county-maintained. Part are state-maintained. I checked the latest paving list, and... Hartwell, Lakeside, and I'm sorry, I'm forgetting.
There's about four or five of them that are on the
that
list
are going
for
to be
this year
paved.
To be repaved.
Right, but they're county.
I believe that was a state paving list.
Yeah. But if we annex, do they then become our streets?
The state ones will stay state main county ones. The ones with the county will become ours.
All right. Just a question. You got a city street that we are responsible for paving, right? Mm-hmm. How do we allocate that with the purple and the green?
Well, you got to pave the whole street. We wouldn't just stop.
That's exactly the question. I was hoping to get a yes on that.
But Pat, most of those folks, those good folks, will want to come into the city after a while.
All I'm saying is, I think we keep equating this to the what happened downstairs when we had this forced annexation. I remember that was a whole lot different than 86% of a subdivision. I don't remember in any deliberation for a subdivision that we've ever had a subdivision come in with over 75% want to annex. In this rule, I've never seen 86%. Now we've had, I think what happened when they had the uproar was that we were going to cut their sewer and water off if when the house sold and they were done. Is that not the way it was, Roger?
Some wanted to do that. Not everybody. Not me.
The city. No. I spoke in opposition because that wasn't. In other words, we're going to cut people's service off if they didn't. But I've never seen. I've been here a long time. I've never seen 75% of a neighborhood sign a petition and come to the city and say, we want to do it, and say, no, we don't. We only take the people who want to come in. It's a very unusual situation, obviously. But, Roger, has there been any other subdivision that signed 75%?
Yeah, we had the Dogwood subdivision, or it's along Dogwood Road and Two Notch Road, and that was the last time that I remember. I think it was in 1999 that the city council forced in a couple of people.
But they did, in other words, they didn't want to have a donut hole.
That is correct.
Okay.
What about the properties that where the developer said, if it's contiguous to the city, then we'll be annexing? Will they be allowed to have donut holes because they're not owned by the developer anymore?
Well, all of the property was signed. The annexations agreements say that if the property is transferred from the fellow who signed the annexation agreement to a third party,
that
third party is obligated by that annexation agreement, and the annexation agreement is filed with the RMC office, so they should have had notice of that when they purchased the property.
But, Jane, that's a separate issue from this.
I'm not even sure.
I'll be honest with you. I think I would have a real dim look at it, and I hope I understand what you're talking about. That area just north, there's two streets in there that have signed that we could say, we want you to come in the city now because of what Gary just described. To me, that really is forcing people in. This is a donut issue as far as I'm concerned. That issue is totally different. I would not, if we say, all right, the original developer said this, and now you've got to come in, and we have nobody that wants to come in, then you're talking about some real serious problems there.
They had noticed that they would be annexed when they bought the property.
I understand.
It's a legal transaction.
But again, it's a whole different situation.
Otherwise, the city
would be likely. You're off on another tangent on that one.
Stick, I think, to this particular issue, and I'll tell you, I started off in the beginning, and I don't like donut holes. Let's start right from there. I don't like donut holes, but I do want to say that there's been more heat up here than there's been out there tonight, and I think that's wonderful. I think the way the petition was presented, I think the petition method is the way to go for this particular thing. It's a unique situation. I know we got 86%, but I think that percentage would be considerably lower were it not for the fact that we do have to take over the sewer system. That's really where they are coming from. I recognize it. I think we should all recognize it. And I would like, when we get the motion on the floor, I will propose to amend it so that we go by the petition method rather than the 75% method.
Okay. Any other questions of Larry? I know Pete's over there. Okay, Larry, thank you.
You better arrest us.
Of course, Mr. Mayor, all I can say is thank goodness for computers, because we deal with donut holes every day on Henry Street and Aiken Estates, Richland Avenue. You know, there's donut holes all over. Of course, currently these folks are programmed in the 911 system. When they dial 911, it automatically goes to the sheriff's office. What they would do is just program ones that came in the city where if they dialed 911, it would come to public safety. Mm-hmm. The ones outside the city, their calls would remain with the sheriff's office.
Okay. So you see no particular problem?
No particular problems. If my officers, of course, if they would patrol the street and they saw a crime take place, they would stabilize it. And then, of course, it's just a call to the dispatch to give them the address, and the dispatcher can say yay or nay if that particular house is in the city.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it does not present a problem with that.
Okay, good. Any questions? Thank you, Pete.
Okay.
Thank you. Anyone else like to speak on the issue? No one else. Okay. All right. It's back to council.
Mr. Mayor, I would like to propose that we pass the annexation ordinance with the amendment that it come in via the petition method rather than the 75% rule, which means all.
Okay, I second that.
And just so I'm clear, and the record is clear, when you say annex via the petition method, you are asking that the ordinance be amended so that only those people who signed the annexation petition...
Absolutely correct.
Right. Okay, any discussion? We have a motion and second.
You're voting on the amendment right now, and then you will vote on the ordinance.
Okay, all right.
What are we going to do about Mr. McCarty, for example?
Yeah. Well, we've got something on the table right now. Let's vote on the amendment that Dick made a motion, and I second it.
Right.
Any discussion about the amendment?
That's my discussion.
Our discussion.
What? Okay. Excuse me.
Yes.
What are we
going to do with this situation with someone who changes their mind? And I can understand his mind, and I can understand how that can happen. What do we do with that? Are we not going to honor this request, no matter what, or what?
No, I'd say let's let him take his name off if he wants to.
It seems to me that that's a subtle trap, though, really, because
we can have 60 or 70 to change their mind, and what do we do then?
In the past, council has had an annexation ordinance before you where only one property owner was attempting to annex one piece of property and has withdrawn that annexation ordinance for whatever reason, and council historically has allowed that to happen.
But that's, you mean
just because we do it this time doesn't mean we have to do it every time. We're right now voting on this amendment, and if the amendment, as I see it, doesn't include his name, then that's part of this motion and this proposal right now.
Okay.
That doesn't speak for what's coming in the future. We don't have to just say because of what we're doing now at this time, somebody says they want to take the name off. We don't have to. I don't see any obligation to have to do the same thing.
We have two public hearings, Mr. Mayor, and we know of one name that has been said tonight that this person wishes to withdraw his name. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how we can not receive his request to do that. Now, after we get the second reading, that's a different...
Well, as I see it, we're taking the petition as it is. This one person wants to take his name off.
Exactly.
We either agree or we don't. But everything else is fixed after we do
exactly.
That's
okay.
Exactly.
That's the way I see it. Is that right? Is that right, Gary?
As I understand the issue before council, you are moving to amend the ordinance to annex only those who have signed the petition, and presently he has signed the petition. So that's the way the amendment reads right now.
So do we need to amend that motion to add that with the exception of the gentleman who has before tonight indicated that
mover accepts that amendment and the seconder accepts that amendment?
Jerry McCarty.
He wrote that letter some time ago, didn't he? It was before this meeting started.
A week ago.
So I think we ought to honor that.
I could accept that.
Okay.
One other question, Mr. Mayor.
Okay.
There will be perhaps 2 months, Roger, between this meeting, this vote tonight.
It could be several weeks to several months.
Weeks to several months. And quite frankly, it might even be possible if they see fit to withdraw the petition. Is that not correct?
They being?
The residents who have brought the petition to us.
I mean, you'd have to get a letter from each individual who signed that petition to
right.
do so. But just like Jerry McCarty is one individual who has asked for that withdrawal, you've also, in between time, had three people that signed the petition. And you may get other people between now
so
and the time of second reading
that
will sign
point.
The petition, especially as we get closer to purchasing the sewer system and people could understand the process a little bit better. So there might be a little bit of ebb and flow as you go along.
Right. And my point is that the motion only addresses one individual, but we will allow it to go both ways. We will allow people in the green who so wishes to add their names to do so and stripe it like we did those tonight. And
the only caveat to that is under state law, they're required to sign the petition within 6 months of the date of the petition, and November 1st, 2004 is the date of the petition. So they've got to sign it within 6 months of that date. Mm-hmm. You can't add any more signatures after that.
You know, if worst case, and a lot of people do that, we've got the prerogative to decide whether or not we want to continue.
Right.
That's correct.
We may decide not to annex.
Yeah, that's
not
true.
Not to work on the sewer.
If it gets
I don't
to
see that happening, but I mean, the council could do that at that second reading.
But what Mr. Davenport said, you said something about, you know, the second reading, we'd have the price of the system, we could tell. Weren't you talking about that, Mike?
That's two
years down the line.
Correct.
And I had kind of got the feeling that might affect people's.
The way I read this, if we do not get a satisfactory contract that they agree with, it's all pulled. Is that right?
You know, if for some reason we cannot come to a satisfactory agreement on the purchase of the system, then we go to option B. Option B could be that council may decide to condemn the system and purchase it through condemnation. But, you know, there are some other avenues, but we think that we'll be able to work with the sewer provider currently and come up with something
that
you'd all agree with.
If we don't get that done, it's got to be done before the second reading. If it's not done, other we can't work it out, I think it's only fair to these people to say, well, then we'll pull the whole thing. And that's what they're expecting, I believe, is that they want to make sure that the contract's worked out before we go to second reading.
Correct.
I'm just
saying that if council cannot come to an agreement with Carolina Utility Services on a price, then council still has some options available to them.
But as far as what we said in this document, also said to the Planning Commission, we're not going to bring the second reading until that issue is resolved.
That is correct.
Okay.
That is correct.
Okay.
And I really believe, as I listen this evening, that the folks who signed this, we've had a very wonderful group of people out there, and they have signed, I think, in good faith, and I really suspect that there are going to be more pluses than minuses over the next few months.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Any other discussion? If not, a show of hands, all in favor of the amendment change? Okay. Opposed?
And Mr. Mayor, I just think we're voting for donut holes, and that's why I'm against it. I'm very much in favor of working this out, but we're voting for donut holes, and it doesn't make any sense to me.
That was just the amendment.
That's just the amendment.
Well, that's what we're doing.
Right, we understand. Okay.
Hopefully, all of the Jed Nakes folks will be so satisfied that we won't have any donut holes by.
That's right. We need.
In defense of.
Dick, do you want to make a motion on the ordinance now? On the first reading of the ordinance?
Mr. Mayor, I make a motion that we approve the ordinance as amended.
Okay. We have a second. Okay. Any discussion? If not, sure.
Never mind.
If not, a show of hands, please. All in favor of passing the ordinance. Okay. Opposed? Okay. Passes.
This is a further word. I would not have voted to bring you in without voting sure, I promise. I think that would not have voted for that.
No, I'm not trying to save himself.
You're the one lady like that to agree with.
Thank you all very much for being here, your patience and comments. Appreciate it. Okay, item 3 under new business.
Round 1.
Yeah.
Well, you drove it. I heard you drove it. Several people told me. I saw Dick Smith out there driving our streets.
Oh, that's pretty much what I heard from the other guy. He doesn't like jumping. He says he's safe.
Item 3 is the first reading of an ordinance to approve the sublease at the Aiken Airport. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. We have an ordinance, and I'll read it. The title is an ordinance approving a sublease of a portion of the leased area between the City of Aiken and Aiken Aviation Enterprise Incorporated to Aiken Hangar LLC. As we've discussed on more than one occasion, every time that there's a sublease agreement, our agreement with our FBO states that council needs to approve that sublease. On their property that they are leasing from the city right now, somebody wants to build a hangar. If you're familiar with the airport, it's near our fuel supply system. There's room in there. The commission has looked at it. Mr. Morris has looked at it from staff viewpoint, and we all agree that this would be a great place to have a hangar. Also brings us at least one more person that will be basing their aircraft at the city airport. So for your consideration tonight, this is approval of a lease agreement between Aiken Aviation Enterprises and Aiken Hangars LLC to build a hangar on the leased property of the airport. On your consideration, a second reading public hearing would be held.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Do we have a motion?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Second.
Okay, second. Okay. I've got one question, maybe two. Is this a hangar for one plane, or is it capable of housing more than one?
It is.
I'm just curious.
It is capable of housing more than one. It's called the arm hangar structure, so it's a very large square structure.
Okay.
So that the number of aircraft that could be placed in it, of course, would depend on the size of the aircraft.
Right. Oh, okay.
But more than one could be in there.
Yeah. And Larry, how close is the hangar to the terminal?
Here's the terminal right here.
I know. How close is that, though? This isn't the scale.
I don't know. That isn't the scale. You're probably from that hangar to the terminal about 400 feet.
Okay. All right. Thank you, sir. Any other comments? If not, show hands, please, all in favor. Passes unanimously. Item 4 is the first reading of an ordinance establishing incentives for building facades in the downtown area. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance establishing incentives for the improvements of building facades in the downtown area of the city of Aiken. The next three ordinances that you'll have before you are incentives that we considered and talked about at the Aiken Horizons that we feel will help bring about the type of development that you would like to see happening in Aiken, helping with some of the empty buildings and some of the north side construction. The first one concerns facades of buildings in the downtown. There's been a number of articles written and some things that talk back concerning the facade of the building between the Bowery and the Palmetto Package Shop. This type of an incentive that you have before you tonight would help hopefully with individuals to keep structures like that and to, as they go ahead and renew building faces, to help encourage that upkeep within the downtown area. It's $5,000. It's a matching grant. So in other words, if they spent $10,000 on their facade and they submitted the bills to us, we'd pay 50% or a maximum of $5,000. If their bills were $8,000, then we'd pay $4,000. We do have funds set aside in holding funds for this. I think right now there's like $98,000, so more than the number of facades we probably have in the downtown area. The one area that we do not have right now is design standards or guidelines in the downtown area. We talked to Randy Wilson, who's been preparing this for a long time, and he should have those guidelines available sometime next week or the following week, so we'll be bringing those to council for a review and a work session, probably at our April 11th meeting, at which time you could then decide what direction you want to go with those guidelines, so that that we could develop ordinances or have further review or whatever you want to have. Once those guidelines have been put in place for the downtown area, then to receive this grant, not only do you have to follow what we currently have in place, but you'd have to follow those guidelines that would be put in place at that time. But at this point in time, we don't have those guidelines, so we cannot have that as part of the requirements for the ordinance. This is the first reading of a facade grant program for the downtown area. This is, by the way, done in many other communities. This is not something new, but we do feel it's going to make a major difference in the proper type of development we want downtown. Upon your consideration tonight, a second reading public hearing would be held at the next regularly scheduled meeting.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion?
So moved, Mr. Mayor. I have a question, and I'll ask it.
I'll second it, and I have a question.
Okay.
I'll third it, and I got a question.
We are saying that before we give anyone any dollars, that we will have design standards in place.
No, we are not saying that. If council decides to approve design standards or guidelines for the downtown, which way you want to approve that, then they would have to follow those. Currently, right now, if somebody wanted to go ahead and improve the facade downtown, we don't have standards. So if somebody came to us tomorrow, and of course this is not second reading approval, they could ask for the $5,000 to renew the downtown facade of their building.
But Roger, could we not? I'm sorry.
My other question is, is this a one-time $5,000?
It's a one-time grant for a facade. Now, to maybe go one step further and try to maybe read what you're getting into, if council wants to, we could approve this on first reading tonight, and if you wanted to wait on second reading until we have the design guidelines or standards, mm-hmm. we could certainly do so.
I think we should.
But we felt we wanted to get this before you tonight, get your reaction, see what you want to do. We feel that in the next few months and again, it's depending on how council wants to go with it. Design guidelines will be for you for approval. At that time, then we can go ahead and have second reading of this. But again, we felt that we presented this to you as a package before. We wanted to get your reaction to it and make sure that there are not other changes that you want to have other than the design guidelines.
Well, Roger, if for some reason it takes delays to get the design guidelines, because it could take a while, couldn't we just say if you, in order to qualify for this $5,000 match, you have got to submit your plans to us? Period.
You could do that.
You got to.
Do
I mean, they won't get the money unless they submit it. It's just like a architectural
review
committee.
Bills. You're right. If we just get bills, you could cover up a historic facade.
No, in other
final.
Words, if you're going to qualify for this $5,000 grant, you got to submit a plan to us that says what are you going to do.
Absolutely. We've got to have our guidelines too.
Well, no, I agree with that. But I'm telling you, everybody thinks these guidelines are going to be easy. When you start getting all of these people involved, it's going to take a little longer. But what I'm saying is, just put it in here saying if you're going to qualify for this $5,000, then you will submit what you're going to do.
Who has the approval right?
I would say we'd either do it with the submit it to either, well, you need some more work, or city engineer, someone who will, present it.
Well, submit it to us until we get these guidelines
exactly.
done.
I agree.
Mean, in the meantime.
Could I make a suggestion if you feel that way? So council's not sitting here on every set of plans to approve. Some of you are qualified, some of you are not qualified and trying to decide that. But until design guidelines are developed, you could go ahead and send it to the Historic Preservation Commission and let them make approval on it.
That's probably...
So you don't have to
that's what they
bring
do.
Every submittal before you.
What's
but they
the
have nothing Excuse to say about downtown, do they?
No, but I'm saying if you want to... In other words, if you're saying that you want to get this approved in the next 30 days... instead of each one of these, and we're not going to get a flood of these applications, but if you want someone to go ahead and review an application, my proposal would be to go before a body that you already have, and that's the Historic Preservation Commission.
I just want to make sure that they
don't see the rush. We're working on guidelines.
Which guidelines would they use?
common sense guidelines.
We've got a committee that's been working on guidelines
right.
for some time now,
there
right?
You are. That's right.
And my understanding was we're pretty close to having something that we can review. What is the rush here? I don't see any problem with passing this on first reading, but I think we ought to hold up until we have guidelines. Not just go ahead and submit stuff and then you don't have anything you're going by. We've talked about this for years, having guidelines. What's the rush here all of a sudden to push it to the point where somebody's making a decision?
Because we're
out of the blue.
I think we got a building that somebody's fixing. We got a building that somebody's fixing to push down in 2 weeks. I think that's what I was looking at saying. If he submitted it,
I don't think this is going to make that much difference.
It might not. I don't know.
Figured out how much it would.
I do want to say, by the way, that I asked one of the preservation architects that's working in the city at the moment to take a look at that facade, and I was very upset with the article that the Aiken Standard published about how it was going to fall down on people and it was going to fall down any day. I mean, yeah, if you take away every sidewalk, every brick on the side and every single semblance of support, it may fall down. But the footings are the way buildings were built at that point in time, particularly commercial structures. It's got a dirt floor. If you wanted to shore it up, you could dig it out and shore it up relatively easily. But that's not what he wanted to do, so that's not the point of view we got. But I just have to, in public, make a statement that I don't think for a minute that those statements about how it's going to fall down, if we don't, you know what I mean, are true. I just don't believe it, and I've just seen other towns say things like this. But back on this, 5,000, another thought I had about this, and I don't know how, I'm just talking. 5,000 is not a lot of money if we really want someone to preserve an historic facade. You said we have $90,000 in the fund?
Close to
$100,000.
We surveyed a number of cities, and Susan's not here anymore, but we've saw 3,000, we've seen 5,000. We saw a few cities that went up to 10,000. But 5,000 was a pretty good average. But again, council could look at any number that you'd want. We don't have that many facades in the downtown area that we're probably talking about. But the few that we do have, we probably want to save.
Can I ask my second question? I wanted to know if this was only going to be downtown, or could it be other historic buildings that...
Right now it's written for downtown only.
Downtown.
I believe, Gary, it's in the DB, it's the way it's written. I've got to look at it for a few days.
Must be the area zone downtown.
Yeah. So it's only the DB. Again, you could expand, you could do whatever you want to. This is primarily considering commercial buildings that are the fabric of what we consider the downtown that we want to save. But again, when you look at a facade grant, you're not just looking at the brick wall. You're considering what if somebody wanted to take out the windows and put back different windows or doors or awnings. It is the type of structure would be painted, you know, the painting of that structure. So there's a number of things you're looking at with the facade, not the brick. In fact, most of the time, it probably would be windows or it might be doors or awnings on it.
Which is exactly what we have over here.
And that's where, Roger, I think that we'll have more people applying for these funds than we think because of painting.
Correct.
Windows, window repair, those kinds
but
of things.
But on those cases, you're not going to be spending probably $10,000 either, of which we would match $5,000. But again, the downtown, as you all know, is very important. And we just feel something needs to be in place soon, whether we wait a month or two, or however you want to do it, whether you want to stay at $5,000. There's nothing magical about the $5,000. It was just a number we picked based on surveys that we did of other communities throughout the United States. Now, not that many communities in South Carolina do this. Not that many do it.
I just had a question about it because I didn't know what...
But we have seen them as high as $10,000.
With a match of $10,000.
Right, match.
How do we handle it if the owner changes and the new owner decides they want to change a facade? Are we going to allow a new owner to apply for facade change? Or are we saying a one time per structure? I think there are cases where maybe a new owner has a better idea or something nicer yet than what the past owner had done. it's possible.
I think something ought to be in here that if you give them a grant to restore the store, the front, and something ought to be written that says, you know, we want this to stay like it is.
Well, certainly, if we have some guidelines that we all agree on, and that's our guide, you know, and we say you do it like this, and that's acceptable.
That's a good point, because otherwise we could spend the money and then lose it.
That's right.
If council adopts the guidelines, then those guidelines would be in place.
Right.
Require them to comply.
And the guidelines are going to be talking about the type of window. You know, is it going to be 6-pane, 8-pane, the type of doors, the type of awnings? It's going to cover a variety of different types of materials that a person would or would not be able to use in establishing either A, a new building, or B, in the renovation of an existing building.
Mr. Mayor.
Yes, ma'am.
We have some words of insight in the audience.
Okay.
Please come up to the front if you're going to talk. Thank you.
I didn't really intend to speak, but I'm just listening to, I'm Sissy Sullivan, 1205 Not Drake. Just listening to you all speak about this issue, it's because this isn't, just to clarify my understanding, this is supposed to be an incentive program to motivate owners of downtown buildings to maintain their facades, regardless of if that is a new building or a historic building. And there's no it's not a requirement for them to maintain. I mean, I'm sure there's some codes or something, but I guess what is really the, are we wanting them to preserve the historic facades, or are we just trying to make the facades as nice as possible? And I think that's where all these guidelines and things kind of come into place, because what are you really trying to achieve? Are there some, you know, historic buildings that you really want them to be preserved as a historic downtown building? And so the guidelines for that building, to me, seem like they would probably be very different than the guidelines for a newer commercial downtown building.
I would say they would be in the guidelines. They'd be in the guideline package. You can be like this if you want, or you can be like this, or you can be like this. But you would include those good ones that you want, certainly. Those good designs, that's what we would like other people to duplicate as much as possible, probably.
Well, maybe there's some buildings in downtown that need to be considered, you know, incorporated into we call our historic district, so that they would then be preserved, you know, as they should be historically. I mean, it would be pretty extensive set of guidelines, I think, you know, if you look at the broader scope of the different types of architecture and things that we have downtown. It's just food for thought, but it's really, you know, if we have incentives, what are we trying to incent, and really think about that given the different types of buildings we have. I mean, it's complicated.
Would it make sense, though, and I agree with Jane on this, $5,000 is not very much, but if it's a historical significant building, maybe we have up to 10,000, something to work.
Maybe it's more like a grant that you apply for, and maybe there are different guidelines based on the type of building.
This is a grant. They don't pay it back. It's 50% match grant. So, you know.
Well, there's also varying dimensions of street frontage on buildings, you know, some, you know, so all that I would, you know, I mean, I think it's great that you want to do this. It's just thinking, you know, about, is it the cart pulling the horse or the horse pulling the cart? Really, what is it you're trying to motivate? And I'm just kind of just putting it out there for consideration. I don't have the answer, but just thinking, listening to you all and knowing what is downtown and what do we want to preserve in terms of the facades, or what do we want to motivate in terms of new facades. So I'm kind of pro guidelines and having some kind of standards set prior to allowing people to apply for a grant. I think it makes more sense to know what you're really allocating that money to.
I don't think there's any question that's what we want to do.
I would think that we're trying to preserve what we deem historic in the downtown area, but also have some continuity in terms of the appearance of our storefront. You know, you wouldn't want a purple and orange and, I mean, all kinds of, people have their own perception of what is taste to them and what looks good to them.
Yeah.
And so you want some continuity in terms of the storefront and the appearance of the storefront. But
primarily, again, preserving, but we see it as historic in our downtown area, and just not destroying everything that...
So maybe there needs to be some kind of assessment of which buildings are considered historic, and maybe those should be included in a downtown historic district or something. Anyway, I just more food for thought. I'm sure it's been discussed at times in the past.
Well, the whole subject of the historic downtown has been discussed many times. And
what has
the majority of folks
been?
Have not been willing to go along with that.
And what has been their, why have they been resistant?
Well, the same reason a person doesn't want to be in a historic district.
Same people who don't want to come into City of Aiken.
They don't want to subject themselves to having to put certain materials and go before the board and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, some people want that and others don't.
Right.
But I think things are changing a little bit. I think it's time to survey city owners downtown, building owners, and see what their feelings are now. Now, when I say that, I mean in terms of a whole district being historic.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, now you could go for a landmark if someone wants to do that, or, you know, under certain conditions, you could force it. So you get into these situations. Do you want to force an owner who does not want to have their facility to be a landmark? Like the old post office? Or what do you do?
Well, the whole point about this is that we all agree, I believe we all agree, that you're not going to get the $5,000 unless it adheres to certain design guidelines, whether it's written. We know we got, so I mean, that issue about forcing to do it is separate anyway, so we could still say you're not going to get the $5,000 until you have the design standards, which we know we're going to get hopefully soon.
But the question I have is, do they have to follow the design guidelines whether they apply for the grant or not?
That's the critical question.
Council could require all properties in the downtown district to be subject to the design guidelines.
And that's the real crux of the situation.
And that's where I hope we're headed.
Right. So it seems to me guidelines first, and then let's incent them to follow the guidelines by having a matching grant program.
Well, I think,
and that's what you guys were debating before: is when do we actually vote on this on the second reading?
Right.
I think
you're going to have. It's going to be obviously easier if you say you, in order to get this $5,000, you got to follow these. But once we say you got to do this, everybody downtown, you're going to see a slightly full house here, and it's not going to be as easy as everybody says. I mean, so saying that you got to have it to get the grant is the incentive, right? Which I think many of them will use. That's why I'm wondering whether $5,000 is enough on, especially on historical, if it's something that's very difficult to save. And Jane, I'm not sure about all the stuff we're hearing over here, but I mean, I went and looked at it, and I'm like this. But I mean, if it was higher, maybe we could save that. But I guarantee you one thing, if we say it's going to be this and you've got to save the awning and the windows and this and whatever, he can use that to do it. That's where I'm coming from, Mr. Mayor, to try to do something, at least try to save the one building that we got.
Yeah.
I do want to restate my question and appeal to you that there are buildings in the other part of Aiken that's just as old as downtown that would qualify for some of
Thank you, Sissy.
Thank you.
Would qualify. And I just want you to think about that as we go through the old Aiken Master Plan. We look at what they want to do with some of the old structures there. That some of those buildings might even qualify.
Yeah. And we'll be getting into another incentive soon on as renovations are made on buildings on the north side. And doesn't matter if it's the facade or not, but they would have an incentive as far as a tax credit is concerned.
Well, that's a little different from having help with restoring a historic building.
Yes and no. I mean, it's the same thing. They'd be able to get 3 years of the taxes credited if they go ahead in the area that you have on the map before you in green. And they fix up their older house or whatever that building might be. To get back to this design guidelines, and we were talking about historic structures. Obviously, not every structure downtown is historic.
Yeah.
but you'd want to have these design guidelines or this incentive for all structures, whether they're historic or not, so that, again, what we're looking at here is exterior improvements. Could be corrections on their windows, so they meet whatever standards we come up with on the type of windows they would have. They don't want to meet those standards, so they don't get the grant. Same thing on painting. You know, if they're not going to meet the standards that we eventually come up with on painting, they don't get the grant. Trim work, enhanced entryways, display windows. There will be guidelines and standards set up for all those things, whether it's a historic building or more of a modern-looking building, but we then get more of a blend within that downtown area of the look that we want to achieve, and that's what the whole guidelines are about.
I have I have a question, but I'm going to yield to Wade, who's been trying to talk, or if the mayor wants to call him.
I guess so.
And if we're going to have a public hearing, you may want to, again.
You owe me one, Wade.
Well, we're asking questions now. We can always ask questions.
Right. This is Wade Brody, 422 York Street. I'd like to congratulate council for bringing this proposal forward.
Would you give me a moment, please?
Sure.
Do we have a motion and second to suspend the rules?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, sure.
I move.
All right. All in favor? We're going to be legal here. Okay, Wade.
Thanks for bringing the proposal forward. I have two suggestions. One is, based on the number of applicants that I would anticipate, $5,000 is low. I'd like to see $10,000. And second, I'd like to see you go ahead and, as you adopt this, at least set up some temporary procedure in case somebody comes along in the interim, because it might take 2 or 3 months to adopt these guidelines. And it'd be a shame to miss an opportunity to have some control over a building downtown that somebody may want to take the opportunity of this grant. So it looks to me like city staff could do this on an interim basis.
The problem that I have with that, Wade, is we don't have a set of guidelines that can be objectively looked at to determine whether somebody's entitled to the incentive payment or not.
I think we should be fairly close on the guidelines. What we're not close to is the mandatory part. How close are we to these guidelines? We've been supposedly working on this thing.
Those guidelines, again, should be in our hands sometime next week, and they should be to City Council no later than April the 11th.
All right. So, I mean, the problem
will arise when two people come to the city, whatever process we decide to do on a temporary basis, and one of them gets approved and one of them doesn't. And we don't have guidelines that say what.
What I'm saying is that if it's April, we're going to be looking at the guidelines. We're going to make it. Then I think it's okay to say we're going to establish the guidelines before you have it. As long as we're that quick. I was concerned because we've been talking about these guidelines for a long time. I'm glad to see that we're moving forward.
One of the things that happened when I was on the Preservation Commission is that we adopted that new deal where if you did the interior in a historically sensitive way, that you got some kind of a tax incentive for doing that. Remember that?
It's a federal incentive, isn't it?
Well, no, it wasn't, because Jan Wall and Jenny Huckabee applied for it after they had done number 10. Now, they had to jump through all the hoops and show the pictures before and show what they had done, et cetera, et cetera.
Was that state money?
Pardon?
Was it state money? Because it wasn't. I don't think the city has.
It wasn't city money.
There's a plan, though, that if, I mean, I know that some right now that someone has had the Preservation Commission come over, look at their building the way it is now. Right. And then, that's true. We did get the state to let our Preservation Commission do it, because we could not get the state guy down here when we needed him. And so we got the state to say, yeah, we have enough faith in the Preservation Commission that they can, you know, decide this. But they were even able to go back to a really historic structure that it had good work done to it. You see what I mean? And let those people get that advantage, because they did. I know Jenny and Jan got it.
That was a state tax credit.
All right. So
we helped them fill out the application, and we.
So that won't work then. But I'm just saying, in the past, we have sort of made some things. Like if someone would come to us and. I'm just trying to think.
The application could be.
You could start talking to them, maybe, right?
The statutes or the ordinance says that the owner would apply for the incentive within 90 days of the final inspection. So you've got a ways before you're going to be ready to apply for this money. And so, you know, once the CO is issued, 90 days, you have 90 days after the CO is issued to apply. So you do have some time.
We still need the guidelines to go.
Well, if you go ahead and adopt this and officially adopt it at the next meeting, the public can be made aware of it. And it's subject to guidelines that, you know, will be adopted in the future. This would give them the opportunity to start the application process and, you know, maybe save something that would fall through the cracks if it takes 6 months to...
Is there an entity that, and I think, Jane, you had this done one time, about someone came down to look at a particular house to see if it's historical significance. Is there an entity that we could say, is it of historical significance in the downtown area that you could get up to $10,000? In other words, is there a, you know, if the goal of this, I agree with you, Roger, you're trying to, if you want to change the facades on some of these buildings that needed changing and whatever, and you get the $5,000, but if it's historical significance that we want to try to save this, that they get to $10,000, and it's judged, aren't there certain people that look at these things to...
I think the owner would have to consent to have the property named as a landmark.
Yeah.
Okay, so it has to be a landmark.
Well, we're making up whatever rules we want to make up.
Which we're good at that.
And we're saying that, you know, the only way you could designate it, or not the only way, but the best way would be to say that it's going to be a landmark structure, just like we did with Hopeland's and Rye Patch. And if you wanted to make that change and said it's $5,000 for any structure except for those that are landmark,
right,
that would give a special designation, like number 10 Downing is a landmark. And if they apply for a facade grant, they can get up to $10,000 versus if, what's the worst case situation? Security Federal, which is not a historic building.
But underneath
there might be, but they're not landmark right now. They would only be able to get $5,000 unless somehow they could prove they're a landmark structure.
Mayor, yes.
Ed Gioby, 541 Grace Avenue. In listening to the discussion this evening on this topic, I think I sense that there may be some confusion in terms of this whole question of grants and incentives. I was a beneficiary of a tax incentive from the city and the county here recently, and Susan French was very helpful in achieving that. The state of South Carolina did institute a program, I think, in Jan 1-04. They had no forms available well into 04, so unfortunately, there were many people who had work in progress or were hoping to start progress that were not able to take advantage of that. So I think what we're looking at here is several aspects of a very important problem. One is the immediate question which you've just discussed in terms of a grant for a facade improvement, whether the structure is historic or simply something that will improve the overall appearance of downtown. I think that's a very admirable and a very worthwhile undertaking. However, I think, as Pat Cunning has pointed out, I think it would be a grave mistake to allow those grants to be made without some oversight of some nature, and I think the guidelines are the proper way to go. I would disagree with Mr. Brody in suggesting there should be some interim solution, because, as been pointed out, there are inconsistencies in that, and I think it would lead to some serious problems. I think that the right way to go on this is for the council to undertake a broader view of the whole issue of the downtown. And as been pointed out, there has been and continues to be probably some substantial opposition to an imposition of historic status for the downtown. However, I think that in again, in looking at the overall question, we do have historic areas in Aiken. And whether or not, if you live in one of those areas, you agree with that or you don't, you are bound by the rules and regulations of the Historic Commission if you live in that area. Personally, I think that the historic designation for the downtown area would be an extremely worthwhile thing, and over a period of time would enhance property values, as has been amply demonstrated in many, many areas. I think the time is far past where we can allow a downtown such as the one that we have in Aiken, which is, I think, almost unanimously agreed upon, is extremely unique and is one of the great selling points of this town. To lose that character because of the inability to impose, if you want to use that word, or to come to some agreement as to what our downtown should look like, and as I understand it, the Downtown Association is presently working on a better plan. I think it's extraordinarily important, and we've reached a crossroads. We all know that Aiken is growing. We all know that there will be progress that, if left unchecked or not regulated, will impair, if not eventually, could destroy the character of that downtown. I think, as someone said tonight, take the post office. As I understand it, there's nothing to prevent anybody from going down there at 12 o'clock tonight and tearing that thing down, and by 6 o'clock tomorrow morning, nobody could do a thing about it. It's time that the town and the city and the people here recognize that, and I think if they were sufficiently informed, I think part of the problem is that there are many people, many of our residents, believe that the downtown is in the historic district and are shocked to learn that it's not. Now, I understand the natural opposition to having an historic district downtown, but I also think that council, in its infinite wisdom, and I think the residents of this town, when they think about it, will come to the conclusion that there is something called the greater good. And the greater good is preserving the character of that downtown. I don't think there's anybody here who would want to see a Wendy's or a McDonald's where true value is. I go downtown every single day, sometimes three and four times a day. I can walk in almost every store downtown. I know people. They know me. I think all of you have that same. If we allow the downtown to deteriorate because we have not taken the proper steps to ensure that we encourage our local merchants, or we, most importantly, as a first step, do something to preserve the character of our buildings there. And we have ample examples of buildings downtown that have been so changed over the years they resemble nothing like what they were, A, or B, have no relationship to the character of that of the downtown area. It is extraordinarily important, I think, that the council think very hard about what they want that downtown to be and to take the appropriate measures to ensure that in the years to come we have a downtown that is still the kind of place we all want to have it be as we enjoy it now. So I think, in conclusion, I basically say, I think, as Pat pointed out, to give grants out prior to having some established guidelines that have been well thought out that will enhance the buildings themselves and enhance the downtown, I think would be a mistake. And I think that the next step after that should be a comprehensive plan to establish some guidelines. And when we talk about guidelines, if guidelines are simply a set of rules that people can either choose or not to choose to adhere to, perhaps there's another step that has to be taken, which is the downtown belongs to all the people of Aiken. And if all the people of Aiken decide that this is the kind of place they want to live in, we have to give consideration to that. I think it is a representative democracy. We don't want to force people to do things that they don't want to do. On the other hand, I think everyone on this council is responsible to the members of their district and should listen to what the members of the district have to say.
Thank you, Ian.
Thanks, Ian.
Appreciate it.
I do have one little question here still, and that is, I basically agree with the idea of incentives. Let me say that up front, and the 5-10 thing doesn't sound bad to me either, but I have a problem and the mayor kind of alluded to or made me think about this. I want to sell my property. It doesn't look very good right now, so I come and get a grant. The property looks better, and I get even more for it than I put into it. That's a problem for me. And we've got this sentence in here, because this is a grant program, the incentive funds do not have to be repaid. Could we maybe have a, unless the building is sold within the next 6 months or a year?
The grant would only cover half of the...
I know. He's put money into it.
Right. It's so he's having put, been he's put real as, much estate, as much as the city's
paying. Having been in real estate for a long time, I know that a few bucks spent wisely will really boost the value of your property.
Well, they're going to have to come to whoever the appropriate person is with the listing of the improvements and accounting of those improvements.
And that may be to the greater good. I don't know. I was going to say,
if that's the case, then it's still good for the city, for the downtown, if it's according to the guidelines, right?
The focus is not on who gets reimbursed. The focus is on getting the facade repaired.
Yeah.
I guess the point, too, is what becomes general maintenance and what becomes facade improvements. I mean, that's a huge, huge difference, and I think it's where the guidelines come in, and we just have to, let's get the guidelines. Nobody here, I think, is going to vote for this unless we have guidelines of some sort, because that's not make any sense. So I think we just need to move on and get the guidelines.
I think many of us have been saying this for a long time. I've heard Jane echo it. I've heard Beverly echo it. So we've been saying this for a long time in terms of having some standards and guidelines for downtown areas. What do we need, Mr. Moore?
Well, we've got a motion and second right now. Do we want to...
someone waiting to speak.
Oh, sorry, Colleen.
Who wanted to... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Colleen Reed, 207 Brandon Road. You have the grant program, and I think that's wonderful, the $5,000, $10,000. But my question would be, if the repairs needed are very extensive, that could cost $100,000, is there some way that you could assist the property owner through a tax abatement program in conjunction with the grant program?
No, you can't do that.
Can't do that.
No.
We got phase two and three that helps them with their taxes, though, as far as improvements, right? I mean, that's if you approve that to the downtown, the one's coming up next.
Right, but they're not eligible for downtown property. Yeah. You know, the facade is not. You can't combine it with these other incentives. I mean, Cows could do pretty much whatever they want to do on some of these things, but.
We really
again,
need.
The way it's written right now, it'd be no.
It's like they said, though, the real solution is to try to talk to our property owners. And I mean, the easiest thing to do to make these buildings eligible for other incentives is not to have one landmark and then skip two and have another landmark. The easiest thing to do is to have an historic district where buildings are either contributing, non-contributing, the way we already identify them. And there are different requirements according to what sort of building. We already have that. We don't have to reinvent that wheel. And it's and there are a lot less stringent requirements to be part of a district than to be an individual landmark building where you've got to prove who owned it and why that was important and all that kind of stuff. So we really already have the mechanism if we can somehow combine that with Randy's suggestions on guidelines and see what we can come up with that is reasonable for property owners. We've already proved in the historic districts that exist, and this was not true before, that property skyrockets in value when you've got an historic district. And that had not been proved, in my opinion, when people were canvassed prior to this, you know. And I just see this as a real opportunity to combine some kind of historic designation along with these incentives and just go to town.
I think there will be opposition, but I don't think we're going to have as much opposition when you have existing buildings when it comes to guidelines. I think there is a sense of the downtown that they want to maintain it. I think once it's explained and you're dealing with existing buildings, one of the things we have to try to do, which is the reason why you need these incentives, there's certain buildings here that have been changed over the years, has been said, and I'd like to try to get them back to what they originally were. That's why you got to have incentives, because they could do whatever they want to as far as maintaining. If you want to try to get them back to the original look, you've got to give them some incentives, or they just continue to do what they've done just to maintain it.
are we going to do?
I would.
I'd like to call the question. Do we need to add?
Well, let's review. Does anyone want to change the $5,000 to $10,000?
Yes, I.
Okay, I support that too.
I think so too. I think I'd like to have some more meat, but we've got it covered here with as far as the design guidelines. If we approve as written, that's where you got it, isn't it, Roger?
It says they have to be in keeping, mm-hmm. And it also says, by the way, restoration, not renovation.
It
did
does
you notice
say restoration.
That?
We could certainly pass this on first reading,
right.
Contingent on second reading coming after we have the guidelines, and push that as fast as we possibly can.
Right.
The contingency on the additional $5,000 would be voluntarily agreeing to become a landmark under the City of Lincoln Historic Preservation Records.
You mean the additional five? The additional five? I'm.
Are you okay to do another five?
Frankly, I don't think $5,000 is enough to really do to some of these buildings that we need to have. But we're going to set the limit in the budget, right, Roger? I mean, it's going to be a line item in the budget. It's going to be
what you would do if this were increasing, you could say that based on the current funds,
based on available funds,
right.
I'm not going to put a line item in the budget as much as we'll have holding funds available to do this.
And maybe we can.
And if all of a sudden they start running low, then I'll come back to City Council.
And maybe we can only do 9 or 10 facilities within a given mm-hmm. budget year. But the cycle, I don't know.
Could we not say up to $10,000? Because somebody may not want to do.
Oh, well, they got to do 50. It's all 50%. Right. In other words, they got to put up. You do 10.
$2,000.
Up to 10. 50% they got to put up themselves.
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Do we need to amend motion?
You know, one advantage, I think, of getting this out on first reading is getting publicity, is that, hey, the city's working on this. We're coming forward here with something that's going to help the downtown folks who want to change their facades to improve their facade. And even though we wait maybe 6 weeks or whenever the guidelines are ready. So we need to change the motions if that's acceptable. If you want 10,000 instead of five.
Yes.
I'll move that, Mr. Mayor, subject to us. We may want to look at putting more meat in it, but I'll move to go from 5 to 10.
Okay. And it would be contingent on guidelines.
Absolutely.
Okay. Those. Okay.
I'm making a motion to amend the. Do we have a motion?
Well, do you accept that as your motion? We've got a motion and a second.
Okay.
Now, do you change?
Who
made the motion?
You
must have made the motion.
Okay.
I need to amend the motion to
10,000.
Up to 10,000.
Yeah. And make it definitely contingent on the design guidelines that the city will.
And I'll accept that.
Okay. All right. Okay. Is that clear, everybody? Okay. Any other comments? Okay. Show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Passes unanimously.
And we'll let Randy Wilson know again, this is critical, right, Bill? Thank you.
Okay. Yes. item five, the first reading of an ordinance establishing incentives for redevelopment of empty buildings. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. This is another incentive. It's an ordinance establishing the incentive for the redevelopment of empty buildings throughout the City of Aiken. This is for any building that's been vacated for 24 months or longer, that's 30,000 square feet or larger. So you could think of these as, I think the politically correct term we now have is large retail stores versus empty big boxes. But an empty big box that's sitting out there that's been vacated for over 2 years could receive an incentive up to 3 years of the difference of taxes of what that building is worth today versus what it is worth after it's been improved or occupied. Again, there's a multiplier of 1, 2, and 3. You can see the formula that Gary put in here. Again, we want to recommend this to City Council because we feel that this would be maybe what is needed to help a developer's bottom line in reoccupying some of these buildings that have been vacated for such a long period of time. And we do have some very long-standing buildings that are out there right now. The old Kmart, where Swan's Antique was at, there's a Bilo there. The old Belk's building is another one. That each of those have been vacated for 10 or more years. Two prime examples that I can think of right off the top. So for your consideration tonight, this is an ordinance to establish an incentive for the redevelopment of empty buildings in the city of Aiken. And upon your consideration, a second reading public hearing would be held.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion?
So moved. Move we adopt this incentive for redevelopment of the empty buildings.
I'll second.
Let's get it for the next public hearing.
Okay. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay, passes. Yes. Item 6, first reading of an ordinance to establish an incentive for redevelopment of property on the north side. Mr. Duke.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance establishing an incentive for the development of property on the north side of the city of Aiken. First of all, I gave each of you tonight a new map, which better identifies this area. The map I gave you last week needed to be changed, but they didn't have time to change it. The changes that are on this new map versus the old one is the area along Barnwell from Chesterfield Street west to Florence up to Edgefield has been deleted from the incentive area. That's where those new condos are going in, where Rose Hill is at, etc. And then we also added in the southeast quadrant or area between Park Avenue and Colleton from Williamsburg East as an area that you might want to consider for the redevelopment incentive. There's a number of small little units in there, plus there's some older industrial type property that could be redeveloped in that area. Again, this is first blush of the area that we think you might want to consider for this redevelopment incentive. And again, the way this would work, it'd be for any new building or for any renovation of an existing structure. And Billy, this is where we'd get involved with that an existing building. It could be historic, or it doesn't have to be historic. That if somebody's willing to go ahead and renovate it, add more value to that area, we would give them an incentive equal to up to 3 years of the difference in taxes. Now, what that says is if somebody builds a $100,000 structure somewhere in this green area on this map, that would add up to close to $1,000 in incentive for that property that they could use to offset their impact fees or taxes or whatever else you'd want in the future. So for your consideration tonight, this is an ordinance to establish an incentive for the development of properties on the north side. Upon your consideration, a second reading public hearing will be held.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Do we have a motion?
Mr. Mayor, if I may, before we have the motion,
sure.
Ms. Clyburn has indicated that she may be developing some property in the area that's being affected, and so she feels it would be appropriate for her to leave the room, so there is no appearance of a conflict of interest for that. And she will file the appropriate
memo
with the clerk.
Okay. So do we have a motion?
Yes. I move.
Okay. Second, and I'll second it. Roger, let me ask you a question, and I guess it really applies to the last one we covered too. The times three. Where did that come from?
It
arbitrary.
Came, it was a very arbitrary. It could have been times two. It could have been times four. The reason I use three is 3 years on a $100,000 home would be enough money to pay for the impact fee for water that we set up on the north side. And one of the concerns I know that Councilmember Price and Councilmember Clyburn had was, are we going to stifle growth on the north side by putting the sewer and water impact fees that we had? And this would more than cover that water impact fee that we added a few years ago.
Mm-hmm. Roger, who gets this money? Let me give you an example. I got those houses being renovated on Chesterfield Street. Okay, we're doing them, they're selling them, and their property values are going from $25,000 to $125,000. When this is done, who gets the $850?
Okay.
The buyer or the developer?
Well, we had that discussion at Horizons, and you had asked who should get it, and the debate went back and forth. There was really no right or wrong answer. If the developer gets it, then hopefully he's going to lower his cost of the house. He's the one that's going to have to pay for that tap fee, the impact fee of $750 for the water and the $400 for the sewer. If you give it to the buyer, then maybe you'd get people to buy these homes and quicker than what they're doing right now.
And when
we have it right now, that it would be the developer, the builder,
the owner of the, who gets,
or if it's somebody who owns that building and renovates it, then it'd be that person.
Okay, but we do have Tool Hills in this area, so that would, is that correct?
That is correct.
All right, so in that case, we may want to have the, see what I'm saying? I mean, we're the developers of, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to change, we could certainly do so. This ordinance here that we have before us, I would hope that within a few years we could pass a resolution saying to discontinue this ordinance. And that's based on the premise that hopefully things will be going so well on the north side, we may no longer need it, or we may want to modify the area that it's in. This is, again, to get private infusion of capital on the north side to get the buildings going up and being renovated, which adds more wealth, adds more taxes to the city. If nothing's being done, we don't get the taxes in. By something being done, we get the taxes to pay this incentive that's being created.
But if someone say, do we want to put this on top of, say, for example, the low-interest loans that these people are getting to renovate these houses and hopefully make some money on the renovation? I mean, do they get that and they get this too?
Now, you're talking about the stuff that Akin Corporation is doing.
Right.
And that's only in a very defined area.
But those are the ones we were talking about, you know.
I'll be quite candid about it. I don't think we need to. I mean, the zero interest on the, you know, you can make a provision that you know, this does not, I mean, it's being done anyway. I'm the grant money is no interest for 2 years.
Yes.
I've got seven or eight of them being done. I mean, it's working. And to be honest with you, I mean, I was a developer. You know, give me $800, thank you very much. But I mean, that $800 could go in to do it again. I mean, I'd just say if it's grant money already involved, then God, I can't believe I'm saying
so
this is the next developer.
An exception here.
You know, I don't think we need to do it. I'm not willing to give away tax money when we need to go do it to help people do it.
If they're already receiving funds through Akin Corporation, then they would not be eligible for it.
That's what I would say.
Right, because they already have an incentive. This is for other private investment.
Mm-hmm.
Is what we're looking at here.
If we did this, this thing's going to continue. Just ride down Chesterfield Street, and they're continuing to go, and it's working. But the idea here, Raj, is to get more of that going, which would be, they already have a large enough incentive with providing 2 years. I got to put up 20%.
Well, you have a limited amount of money within Akin Corporation.
Right.
So they only can do like four or five houses at a time, where I'm hoping this can be spread out throughout the entire area.
I just don't think we need to do it. Let's just limit it to the grant money's already out there in other sources, and they don't.
We will put an exception in here for those already involved or those involved with the Akin Corporation loan program.
This is just on first reading, right?
Correct.
Yeah. But if you have some changes or thoughts on this, it'd be nice to be able to incorporate it now. Okay. We'll make that exception. I think that's a very good one.
Do we need to resolve this developer-buyer situation?
I don't know how you do that.
I think it's a good one.
I don't know how you do it, Mr. Mayor. It's almost impossible. I was more concerned about the grant money that's already there. And Roger's right. This is trying to get more done. We want it out. We want the things done.
Oh, sure.
So as long as we take care of the grant part, I think we'll probably be all right. Because the people basically they got to go out there and spend it out of their own funds and go borrow it from the bank or whatever. So this is all Roger's trying to do, which is right.
They're taking a risk up front.
Yeah.
Now, we do have for the buyers of these homes, if they're buying one, you added the extra incentive about 2 months ago, saying that we would be willing to give up to $8,000 on a secondary loan program. And so there is now a means to make up that funding gap that a number of these potential home buyers would have that cannot get a mortgage that would be equal to the full value of that house. And that has worked great. We've already had five additional buyers being able to buy homes on the north side. So I think with that incentive, Pat, that's giving that home buyer that opportunity. But it could be written either way you want to, whether it's the builder or the...
Well, it seems like it ought to be one way or the other.
Right now it's the builder.
We have to be very careful here, and that's why I'm going to study this map. Because what we don't want to do is have $400,000 units built and somebody get 3 years taxes back and go into a zero lot to a $400,000 contract. I'm going to study this map very carefully, and it's an incentive to try to get. And that's some of the things I'm concerned about. So I'm looking at, but we need to make sure we're targeting the areas that need to be done.
Well, I mean, if somebody wants to build a $400,000 house in this neighborhood, you probably don't need the incentive anymore, because I mean that's the way the market has gone for them.
That's right. And I'm looking at this map and.
Well, let me just say that based on the people that I am aware that live in this area, the advantage for them to move in or to remain in the area is the incentive that Wade offers through the Downtown Development Association, mm-hmm. with the interest rate. The plus is right now for the developer coming in with an incentive 3 years of taxes to encourage him or her to invest in the area. And I guess that's the incentive. But you can't prevent people who choose to, for example, move on York Street because there's some empty lots and building a nice home there.
Wouldn't that be great?
We've been trying to diversify these neighborhoods where you don't have a segment of just affordable houses in one area, but you have a mixture there, so I don't know.
I think it's a matter of us just studying the map. That's going to be okay. And we're designated.
There might be a block here, you might want to tweak. We try to look at it, and to be totally inclusive or in all this, it's kind of hard to look at. The one area I would ask you to look at, because we did have a hard time, is along Colleton, from there up to the railroad track in Williamsburg East. Now, we have included a couple of the Bob Meadows, his properties in there. Should that be in there or not? I mean, we could debate that, if that's going to be redeveloped from industrial to residential. Do you provide some incentive to get that to go to residential from the industrial? In our opinion, we thought, yes, it should be.
Yes.
But again, that's one of those areas, Pat, that you were talking about, that yes, you could have some very expensive homes being built in there.
Right. It looks like you've done a pretty good job on it, but I was just concerned about the two areas I was concerned about are not in. So.
What?
The two areas I was slightly concerned about are not in the green area.
And I just wanted to say, just so it's clear, the ordinance doesn't call this a tax incentive ordinance.
Yes,
now,
absolutely.
I know how the calculation looks, but it really is not. You're not allowed to rebate taxes on property. And so, yeah, we use a similar calculation, but it's not really a tax incentive ordinance.
It's semantics by state.
But it does say commercial or residential.
That's correct.
So it doesn't.
And that's for the reason, let's say something on York Street near Hampton Avenue, that somebody wants to go ahead and tear down one of those old buildings in there. Boy, wouldn't that be great if they put up something really nice. We're going to get the money back, and that's the whole thing. If their property right now is worth $200,000 and they put $1 million of improvement, so we have $800,000 difference, yes, we have some funds going out, but we'll get those back very quickly, double and triple and quadruple fold over the next several years.
It's just another arrow in the quiver.
Exactly what it is. We like to see our quiver full.
Mm-hmm.
I like it.
Okay. All right. We've got a motion and a second. Any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Pass this. Yeah. See if we can get Beverly. Has she gone home?
There weren't any amendments to that ordinance.
I don't think we amended anything, did we?
Yes, the Aiken Corporation loan program. would have an exception. They would not be able to get it if they're involved in the incorporation bulk program.
Okay. Okay, item 7, first reading of an ordinance to establish speed limits on unpaved roads. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance adding section 42-42 Code of the City of Aiken to establish a 15-mile-an-hour speed limit upon unpaved roads in the City of Aiken. This ordinance puts some teeth into our current regulations that council is adopting the fact that all unpaved roads would have a maximum speed limit of 15 miles an hour. Currently, the way that our ordinance is structured, that even though we posted at 15 miles an hour, there may be some interpretation we feel with our judge that because council did not officially approve that new speed limit, there could be some questions concerning this. Richard Pierce, who has to go ahead and try these cases, asked that council would go ahead and approve this, which is basically just putting your official stamp of approval saying that, yes, you want these dirt roads to have a maximum speed limit of 15 miles an hour. If you've gone out there, we've already made the posting of certain types of signs to identify that this is a horse-sensitive area, and this is just one more thing, as Pat says, another arrow in our quiver, allowing us to better control and to maintain those roads and that area in the way we'd like to. So for your consideration tonight, this is the first reading of an ordinance to establish a 15-mile-an-hour speed limit upon our unpaved roads in the City of Aiken. Upon its council's consideration, a second reading public hearing would be held.
Okay, do we have a motion?
Mr. Mayor, I move that we establish speed limits on unpaved roads as per the draft ordinance.
I second it. Pat seconded it. Okay. Any discussion?
What's the normal posted speed? 25?
Normal speed limit in the city on all unmarked roads is 30. No, on other unmarked roads, all roads inside the city limit, it's
35.
I thought it was 35 miles an hour. On the unpaved roads, we've had a variety of different speed limits. This will make everything uniform at 15 miles an hour.
You don't have a lot of roads other than the horse district, do you?
Not too many. We've got a couple. There's one off of Dogwood that's unpaved. There's one between Colleton and South Boundary that's unpaved. Those are the only. We got the one off of Whiskey Road between the golf course and
Whitney Drive.
Whitney Drive that's unpaved. There might be another one out there.
One off of Edry Street that's not paved.
Right.
Well, this is good.
Arbutus Hill.
No.
Oh, you're talking about that. That's more of a... Yeah, that. I guess that is a road going back there. There's four houses back there.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a few, but not a lot.
Power road.
On some of them, you can't even really drive 15 miles an hour. Okay, any other discussion? If not, show of hands, all in favor? Okay, passes unanimously. Okay, petitions, request. One, request use of parkways for Aiken's Macon. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. Every year we have this request come before us where council officially approves the permission from the Chamber of Commerce to use the parkways for Aiken's Macon. This event has been going on well over 25 years. A few years back, we did move Aiken's Macon further to the east so that it encompasses Giles Park and the parkways in that area. This was after doing surveys in the downtown area. This seems to have improved the conditions in the downtown area as far as parking and congestion, and has moved into an area that most of the merchants in those areas welcome the additional traffic. So we feel it's been good for Aiken's Macon, it's been good for the city, and as far as public safety concern, it's more manageable in that area going from York Street to the east to Union Street. So for your consideration tonight, this is approval of Aiken's Macon's use of the parkways along Park Avenue and Giles Park for the period of September 8th through the 10th.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion?
So moved, Mayor.
Okay.
Second.
Okay, any discussion?
Mr. Mayor, what if there's construction along that route in September?
In other words, if somebody's doing something along that roadway, we would certainly have to work with them concerning that to minimize the impact of both parties, both the event and their construction that's going on. If you know something specific, let us know, and Pete and our staff can work out those details.
I don't know a time frame, but I know their plans to do construction on behind the church.
The property that you own behind Miami? Okay.
All churches.
Right. And we could probably get you access off of Richland Avenue or cone off an area to get traffic in and out during that time period.
Okay, we've got a motion second. Any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay, passes unanimously. And that's it. Unless there's anything else we missed, we stand adjourned.
Well, we can watch our cars safely because the lights are not going to be out there ready to show up.